Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Punks. These assholes, they always get away. Those were the words in that grown man's mouth as he followed in the dark a 17-year-old boy who he didn't know. And excuse my language, but those were his words, not mine.
Can't just kill a motherfucker for no reason and get away with it, shout. Gotta have some justice. Whether it's street justice or legal justice. I'm Trayvon Martin. I'm Trayvon Martin. I'm Trayvon Martin. I'm Trayvon Martin. In a hoodie, I can walk anywhere. Obnoxious, even though that is obvious how they freely comply. We was reaching for freedom, now we seeking out justice. Then they get away with it like they paid off the judges. Mama and daddy crying, sad that their son died. His killers on TV telling these foolish lies. Tyrannic is advertised, I vomit on genocide. They taking away precious lives, gotta cover my daughter's eyes. And visually, repeatedly, I feel like they keep beating me. It's 1957, they killing people senselessly. I see this all so vividly, I'm losing my identity. The world is in a crisis, gotta walk with he who's stricken me. I'm Trayvon Martin, I'm Trayvon Martin, I'm Trayvon Martin, I'm Trayvon Martin. In a hoodie, I can walk anywhere I want. Don't shoot me, I can do anything I want. I'm Trayvon Martin, I'm Trayvon Martin, I'm Trayvon Martin, I'm Trayvon Martin. In a hoodie, I can walk anywhere I want. Don't shoot me, I can do anything I want. I walk the streets in my hoodie, no flexing, just cooling. Lacking juice and some skills, so why did he shoot me? It went from innocent living, them blows were given. I don't know how he was driven to the point of no feeling. See, I don't play with folks chilling, so why you come follow me? It's self-defense, ain't nobody harming me. Black and starving, so you call us retarded. Now we building the skills like Malcolm and Martin. We don't listen to Al Sharpton. I'ma be the starter. You talking about a circus? We do this for a purpose. The world is filled with cluttery, people speaking utterly. I'm about to bow on and don't care about who governs. I'm Trayvon Martin. I'm Trayvon Martin.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Bring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You some bitches get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power. Oh, it's black power to my people. This is your brother, your soldier in arms, comrade in battle. This is Sean Kwali. I'm happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hills and smells of North America. As always, we count this a privilege. We count this a joy. We count this an esteemed honor to be able to talk to you, my sisters, my brothers, and some others out there in the radio listening audience from this beautiful revolutionary radio broadcast, Black Power Radio. It's another Monday night, another strong Monday night. We've asked you to tune in for another power-packed presentation. Now, you know when you tune into this radio broadcast, you're not tuning in to Walt Disney. You ain't tuning into no Nickelodeon. This is serious, hard-hitting facts to wake up the people and pick black people up and help us to do for ourselves. We are pushing forward happily. We're happy. We're pushing forward towards September the 7th. That's the Million Youth March 2013. Millions for Trayvon. You heard in the beginning of the radio show, our brother and a man who you see a lot of times now, who has taken on a reality TV career. His reality TV career has taken on a life of its own. I'm talking about Young Scrappy, who was one of the first to put out that song, put a song out there for Trayvon Martin. He say he is Trayvon Martin, and we say we are Trayvon Martin. Long live Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin lives on in us, and now it's going to be millions of Trayvon Martins, millions of young black males, millions of young black females, Trayvon and Trayvonias, that are coming together September the 7th in Harlem, New York, at 125th Street, Adam Clayton Powell Plaza, the building plaza, and we're going to swamp the streets. We're going to occupy New York. We're going to black out New York. We're going to shut it down. Damn it. You kill our young babies in the streets, and you say it's legal through the courts, and there's no justice in the courts, and as Al Sharpton them say, it's no justice, no peace. So we ain't singing no slogans. We showing you some action. September the 7th in Harlem, New York, we're going to shut the bastard down. And it's going to trickle all the way throughout America, all across the country. We're going to show you some force. Since you show us you can kill our children, kill our teenagers, kill our future with no remorse, smile on your face, and the judge sanctioned that, then hell, we got to shut some things down. But make sure you tune in to Million Youth March 2013.com. That's what the website is, Million Youth March 2013.com, to keep up with the latest and the greatest happenings on the boldest movement happening on the planet right now. There's no better movement happening anywhere for black people than this Million Youth March, this Millions for Trayvon. We got a long, long list of brothers and sisters, the greatest scholars and thinkers and warriors and minds of our people coming to converge all in New York. The heartbeat of black America, and really America, coming at one time and all the way from the 5th, beginning at the 5th to the 8th, we're calling it the National Black Family Convention, because our families have to be put back together, or put black together. So the Black Family Convention is the 5th through the 8th, and the 7th is the Million Youth March. Millions of youth. Millions of youth coming together in the streets, on side streets, in back streets, coming together on internet and TV if possible, however we can get it, showing it on cell phones. They all coming together. And I know that puts fear in a lot of the enemies out there, because you don't want the youth to come together. You want to keep them deaf, dumb, and blind, and keep them killing each other so you can stack your warehouses called penitentiaries and stack them warehouses called jails. We want to liberate the black youth. Black youth must be liberated all over America. You're wasting your life and wasting your time. Many of them just standing around wasting time. Wasting time, and even those who are getting your education in the college courses and you're matriculating, you're wasting time because you're not using your degrees and your institutional learnings to help the people who are suffering. We must have a Million Youth March movement. And so our national chairman, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, is the brainchild. God has blessed him to be inspired at this time to be able to put the Million Youth March forward. And so, hell, we got to do it. It's not a one-man show. He just came up with the idea and said, hey, let's do a Million Youth March to kill Trayvon Martin. We got to ride. Well, okay then. So now we got to come together. And we need more people to endorse the march. and to be able to put your brand, your name, and your image and whatever you got behind this march. This is not a new Black Panther march. It's not just a Attorney Malik Shabazz march or a Sean Kweli march. It's a black thing. It's a brown thing. It's a red thing and a yellow thing. It's for indigenous people and people who are trapped in the hells of North America by racist institutions. Institutional racism. And so that's MenAndYouthMarch2013.com. Be sure to go to that website if you haven't seen it, by the way, and see all the great panels, all of the great courses that are coming up. This is a movement, by the way. I want to tell you, this is not just a march. We're not just going to pick it and walk around in a circle. This is a movement. And so past September the 7th, we will be moving and organizing throughout America amongst black youth. Tonight on our radio broadcast, we're happy to bring to you a man who knows all too well about dealing with movements, but of course dealing with youth. This man used to be a gangster, and really, you know how they say, once a gangster, always a gangster. There's still any. He's just a gangster for the right reasons now. But this is a man who was legendary in the South, a man who had rap albums. I remember one called "I Sold My Soul to the Hood." This is a man who many of the rappers that you look up to, like Snoop Dogg, they respect this brother. Others respect him because they know he's real. He put in work in the streets. He ain't no studio gangster. It's a man who you saw him with the guns. You saw him with the choppers. You saw him with the AKs. You saw him with his clique. He was putting in work. But now the man has turned his life around. And now he is the founder of Stop the Killing, Inc. He is the founder of Stop the Killing, Inc. He's called the Ghetto Messiah. That's what I said, the Ghetto Messiah. Now, you remember J. Edgar Hoover said his aim was to stop the rise of a black messiah. And so, you know, Silky Slim don't have it easy. He doesn't have it, you know, laid out on a red, black, and green carpet. It's hard for Silky. He's organizing. Anytime you do this kind of organizing work, it's a hard road. Anytime you do this kind of work, like the Million Youth March, it's a hard road. But it's a road we got to travel. Stop the Killing, Inc. by the Ghetto Messiah, Silky Slim. He's a man who grew up in a depressed neighborhood, in a depressed neighborhood between the North Gates of LSU, known for generations at the South Side. By the age of 12, Silky Slim's life had already taken a downward turn as he began doing a life of crime, dealing drugs and violent acts. By the age of 14, he was sentenced to the Louisiana Training Institute for Boys, now known as Jetson Correctional Facility, for 2 counts of attempted second-degree murder. Taught early in life to be a soldier, once he was released, Silky Slim co-founded the Four Down and West Side Wrecking Crews, which are credited with launching the gang violence that still stains the depressed areas of Baton Rouge to this day. Like any soldier, he had found his war, representing the South with sheer violence. Silky Slim spent the next 12 years bouncing between gang life and prison life. 12 years. Like any parent concerned for their child's safety, his mother sent him to California to stay with his younger brother, who was serving in the military, convinced that the street life was the only way out of the ghetto. Silky Slim joined the Rolling 30 Crips gang and spent the next 22 years in and out of prison from California to Louisiana. By this time, he had tried every drug, using heroin, ice, meth, X-pills, and syrup, and you name it. And Silky Slim had done it. He tried committing suicide at least 3 times, once by putting a loaded 9mm to his head, only to have his 5-year-old walk in and ask, "Daddy, what are you doing?" The next time, he jumped from a 3rd-story window hotel in a hotel on the Sunset Strip, and his shoe caught in the windowsill. He was left hanging and calling for help. It wasn't until 2003 his life began to turn around. While driving a Tahoe, Silky Slim and friends were driving from California to Louisiana when his SUV truck and another vehicle had flipped several times. The crash killed everyone except the only person wearing a seatbelt, Silky Slim. Silky Slim had to push one of his dead friends off of his chest in order to escape the wreck. When he got out of the wreckage, as soon as his feet hit the ground, He heard God speak. I just brought you out of that. Now, what are you going to do for me? Few in Baton Rouge have made such a second chance in life, or have had such a second chance in life as Suge Slim, prepared now and inspired to make a difference. He co-founded Stop the Killing, Inc., a Baton Rouge-based 501c3 nonprofit organization established to stop the violence and senseless killing in our communities. He's a youth counselor and consultant to youth court, working closely with troubled teens and young offenders, teaching them how to solve their problems without resorting to violence. He's the publisher of the Stop the Killing newsletter and co-author of Stop the Killing, Effective Communication Techniques to Avoid Violence and Senseless Killing. Stop the Killing 2007 of that year. Each year, Suge Slim coordinates the Stop the Killing rally, a local event that calls for community residents to stop the violence. Suge Slim's message keeps spreading throughout the depressed neighborhoods through a life or death vehicle. A converted ambulance, the life or death mobile, teaches the youth to value life. It is equipped with the latest monitors and gangs that teach anti-violence techniques and methods. In addition, he leads several anti-violence programs in the area, in public schools. He also had his own radio talk show and has his own radio talk show, the Stop the Killing Hour of Power, on Max 94.1 FM, where he and guests discuss solutions for violence and crime in the city every Sunday at 4 p.m. He also co-hosts with his own television talk show called Stop the Killing, Real Talk with Suge Slim and LaTangela Sherman on Baton Rouge Cable Channel 10. He recently launched a filming company, We Shoot First, a startup geared to expose violence and senseless killings in the community throughout America. His first documentary released in 2010, To Live and Die in America. The former gang leader, Suge Slim's life story continues to inspire youth to change their ways. Suge Slim, the Ghetto Messiah. And he had another documentary that came out, To Live and Die in America, Part 2. And so he's coming on with us. He'll be on with us tonight. And as you can hear, the black man's life was completely a movie. But the thing here now is that he is not the only one who has lived like that. There are many brothers and sisters out there who are doing what we call living the thug life. They're living the thug life. And so we got to talk tonight on how can we stop our brothers and sisters, our youth in particular, from living that destructive thug life that's killing and permeating our communities. As you heard Suge say in his bio, the areas are depressed. Any ghetto you go to, so-called ghetto you go to in America, the areas are depressed. They are a depressing place to live, a depressing place to live and to raise your family and to raise your life. It's designed that way. Why are our communities so depressed? Why does the black community have to be so depressed? Are we such a depressing people? I wouldn't say so. I've been many places. I've seen people in Africa who were very high-spirited. Even in the worst conditions, they had good spirit now. So it may not be about the spirit. It may be about a design and a plan. How come all of our ghettos, or all of the ghettos in America, the black communities in America, I should say, why do they have the same blueprint? Why do they have the same design? Why is there a church and a liquor store on almost every corner? No offense to any religion. Why do they have brothers and sisters standing on the same corner doing the same thing, looking the same way, whether you go from Florida to California to Utah to Oregon to Michigan? Is it the same plan? Is it by design? And if it is by design, who set it up this way? And who wants it this way? Why are we living the thug life? Now, I mean, we got to give it some backdrop, because we know that according to where that came from in the mainstream, our brother Tupac Shakur, he analyzed that differently, saying the hate that you gave little infants F's everybody. So he analyzed it a little different, and he said that he didn't want it to be self-destructive, but we know that most of our people who don't have the political education that Tupac had, that they're going to use it self-destructive, and they're going to use it to kill each other. Now let's just talk about that. When people kill each other, it's because they're in close proximity to each other. So this myth about black-on-black violence is never talked about in the way that white-on-white violence is talked about. White people kill white people. Brown people kill brown people. Yellow people kill yellow people, just as black people kill black people. 87% of white people kill white people. I just want you to have that statistic so you can balance it out, because I know that the media and the news tonight has told you that there's more black-on-black violence than anywhere else in the world. The first place they point to is Chicago, Illinois, and they don't talk about the conditions that were set up in Chicago, Illinois to cause it to be that way. They don't talk about the gangsterism that happened in Chicago, Illinois by Italians and others to cause it to be that way. They don't talk about none of that stuff. Only thing they show you is you being a savage, dead of your knowledge of self, dead of your culture, dead of your folkways and forays, and they broadcast it all over the world like you crazy as hell. So we got to give it some backdrop. But I have to give you all that, but I want to open up in the name of our God, the black God, who answers to our many names with regards to land, label, and language. And I want to give thanks, of course, to our many ancestors who have took lives, given lives, and inspired lives for us to grow and to build what we descend from as black people. We want to give thanks to all of our freedom fighters and our POWs and prisoners of war and those who we call political prisoners who are behind bars, who have tried to give us a bite to eat and tried to feed our children and tried to give us better housing and better clothing and a way to have jobs, and they were imprisoned for that. We give thanks for all of those POWs and all those political prisoners who fought for us as black people and who are languishing right now behind enemy lines. And we give thanks for all of the different formations that came out, the different formations of Black Panther parties and the Deacons for Defenses and the Nations of Islam, the various Nations of Islam, the Moorish Science Temples and the UNIAs and all the groups that came out and came together and stood for our people at different times. We give thanks for you. And, of course, we give thanks for a beautiful, bold, bald-headed black man, 100% black man who was uncompromising to his very last day, who was sent by God to give the same hell to your enemies that was given to us, verbally and through organization. I'm talking about our national chairman from 1998 to 2001, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. And we give thanks for our brother and friend and comrade in battle in this hour who's organizing us and putting us on the square and standing up black men and women all across this country to be strong in a revolutionary spirit. We're talking about our national chairman, Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we want to, again, welcome you to our radio broadcast. If it's your first time, if it's your second time, if you've been a long-time listener and supporter of ours, we're glad to have you here tonight on Black Power Radio. And what is Black Power? Black Power means to define, develop, and defend what's in the best interest of black people. It does not mean that you are some kind of reverse white power advocate. It just means you want to define, develop, and defend what is in the best interest of black people. You don't have to be no racist to say black power. You're not a racist at all. You're very intelligent to say black power. You're crazy as hell to say white power, because white people got all the power anyway, most of the power. But it's breaking. And so know yourself and learn yourself. We're talking about stopping the thug life, the hate you gave little infants. F's everybody, Tupac said. F's everybody. That means that whatever you feed your little seeds and feed the little babies and whatever you feed the community, if you feed us hatred, one day that hatred will grow, and that hatred will manifest. And what has happened is it has manifested into a self-hatred. When you have Jim Crowed the people, black coded the people, when you made it illegal for people to ride on a bus in a certain way and how they wanted to ride on the bus, and you threw rocks at them while they were walking down the different streets in America, when you wouldn't let them get a decent education, you made it impossible for them to read decent books, you made it outlawed them to even read the Bible at different points, over a certain period of time, that hatred, that energy, it grows. And so now the very hatred that was force-fed to us to make us slaves, make us docile, make us incomplete, now it has come back, and it's come back in the worst way. Because it has come back to where those who were oppressed now are trying their best to do the oppression. You're trying your best to do the oppressing now, and you're trying to do your best oppressor imitation. And that's something serious there. Where Willie Lynch said he didn't want us to, you know, the slave master to have to run around and chase anybody, but he wanted the slave to whip himself. And he wanted the captured to, you know, hang himself, to beat himself, to lynch himself, because the slave was already physically stronger than the slave master. Think about that. And the black woman was already more mentally stronger and physically stronger than the white woman who was who she was playing nanny to, or playing nanny to the children. She was already more stronger and more witty. She was already more cunning. She already knew things that she didn't know. She was cooking the food at different points. You know, she was doing hair at different points. She was, you know, massaging. She was doing all kind of things that left them vulnerable. So she knew how to get to that thing and get to them. And so they didn't want to be around us too long, had to deal with us too long, because we were revolting. We were rebelling. We were fighting back. And any time you oppress a people too long, they're going to fight back. They're going to fight back. They're going to fight back, and that's what we did. We fought back, and so we have to fight back today. Even against ourselves, we got to fight back. You can't just give black people a pass. We know we've been robbed of everything. We know we don't have our names and all that stuff, but you cannot give a parasite in your community a pass just because they're black. That don't make sense. You know that black people were whipping each other in the plantation? We were whipping each other. When the white man, the white slave master said, whip the slave, the white man would whip the slave. I mean, the black man, pardon me, would whip the slave with no hesitation. And so all it does is go down the will of time. We want to stop some thug life. We want to turn the criminal mentality into a revolutionary mentality. You want to turn the criminal mentality in your neighborhood to a revolutionary mentality. Now, that means a whole bunch of things. See, now, before we hear from Silky Slim, because we want him to come on very soon, that's what happened to him when his car overturned, when he tried to jump out the window and his shoe got caught, you know. I mean, there were some things that happened in his life that caused complete constructive change in him. There were some things, some signs that were shown to him that it was not his time to go. It was not his time. Now, he was living terrible. A man is living terrible, a man that wants to die. He's living so rough. He's causing so much bloodshed, causing so much destruction, shooting up, bang, bang. And, you know, every day it's drama, it's funk, it's death, it's destruction. He's doing it so much, he had determined in his mind it was better for him to die. But at a certain point in his mind, something clicked. Something in his soul clicked. Something in his spirit clicked when he tried to put a loaded 9mm to his head and blow his brains out. Something clicked. See what? And I ain't talking about the gun. See, his 5-year-old at that time walked through the door, however he got in there, and asked him, "Daddy, what you doing?" See, that's how God worked. God even coming to babies. God will talk to you through the babies. We're talking about a million youth march. God will talk to you through the youth and ask you, "What are you doing?" And see, the youth are asking us, what are we doing? Where are our institutions? Where are our schools? Where's the farmland? Where's the stuff that people have fought for all the generations? How come we don't have nothing? And so many of us, even in the black power movements, in the consciousness movements, in these communities, we're turning many of our youth to the streets because we're not building things for them to stand on. And so many of them say, well, I don't want to do what you're doing. I don't want to struggle like you're struggling. I don't want to go through that because, you know, it don't look comfortable. This is not a comfortable role. This is a real struggle. You know, Chairman Fred Hampton of the Black Panther Party, at times his lights would be cut off, water cut off, you know, for the struggle and for the people. It ain't always easy. Okay, so the youth looking at that now say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to struggle like that. You know, they're in a capitalistic society, and money, you know, Wu-Tang say cash rules everything around me, so money is the driving force about everything, and they're driven towards money, driven towards capital, and they equate capital with freedom. They equate capital, you know, with liberation, and so they're saying, hey, where's the capital? And so where the Black Power movement has failed, that we have failed to provide institutions and failed to provide things they can stand on. And so it made it easy for them to, when I say them, I'm talking about the CIA and those hidden hands. It made it easy for them to come in with cocaine and come in with crack and drugs and infiltrate the community, because they already knew that the youth's mind was driven towards capitalism and driven towards money and driven towards making a profit, turning a buck. So when you have a depressed people, when you got to mentally rob people, when you got to destroy people who don't know themselves, and you give them drugs and you give them guns, and you, put big trucks in the community and open the trucks up full of guns, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? You can't have nothing but some thug life. You can't have nothing but some tribalism. And I'm going to take your calls, by the way. The number to call is 646-478-4447. Let me say it again, 646-478-4447 to get in on this weighty discussion on thug life, thug living, how we stop the killing in the community. This is a discussion that we all got to get involved in. But that's what they did. They put trucks in the community full of guns. You can look it up. Google it. It's there. And they will go to different parts of the country like Los Angeles and, you know, San Diego and other areas, and they would just leave trucks in the most depressed, deprived, poor communities full of guns. And then, of course, the young brothers run to the trucks and they snatch the guns. They snatch the guns. And you pump the community full of drugs and dope. What do you think is going to happen? Now, what I got to draw to you is that they did it first. The Hatfields and the McCoys and World War One, World War Two, and American Revolution, all of that was just them fighting each other. It was just them fighting each other. They were, it's white-on-white violence. They were fighting each other, so they did it first. But we do it second, all right? Let me take a first call here. Area code 347-218, 347-218. You're on live with Black Power Radio. I'm your host, Sean Saddam Kweli. Welcome to the radio broadcast. What do you think about this thug living, Black Power?
Black Power, this is Brother Supreme from Queens, New York.
Hey, brother, how are you?
I'm doing okay, brother. You know, I'm just hanging in there, you know, taking this double, you know, society, way of life, you know, just taking it day by day. What I think about this thug living, I think it's a destructive way of living, brother. You know, it's something like you said, this Million Youth March should be the beginning of a stage where it's going to turn around so they can take the negative and make it into a positive. So then, you know, like I said, this Million Youth March is very, it's going to be something that's going to be close, you know, close to me because of the fact, like I said before, I've been through it. I mean, I've had a family member murdered, black and black violence. You know, it was black on black. It was a young brother that shot and killed my niece. At the time, she was 20 years old. So, like I said, this is going to mean a lot to me. Okay? And it's going to mean a lot to millions and millions of young brothers and sisters, too. So, that's how I feel about, you know, the thug life, like I said. It, you know, this hopefully would be the turnaround for them to take the negative and make it into a positive. All right, do things positive in the community. Yes, Black Power.
Absolutely. What do you, no. I want to ask you. What can you tell the people in your own estimation? And you have a family member that was a victim of gun violence. You lost a niece to gun violence. Can you tell us, you know, how that affected not only you, but how did that affect your family? And, you know, how have you all been able to heal from it, or are you healing from it?
Well, the healing process is very slow with that. I mean, some take it, you know, some of the family members are taking it better, and I'm not taking it well. And it's only been 2 years. It happened in 2011, so it's a lot, you know. And the date where she was murdered is coming up tomorrow, August 13th. 2011, when she was shot and killed. So that's another issue. You know, I'm dealing with that. And, you know, I somewhat was dealing with, I don't think counseling is going to help. So what I'm doing now, I'm studying my lessons, you know, and you know, I'm trying to stay positive because, you know, I felt like this, if I ever came face to face with this guy, I don't know, you know, it would be something serious because I feel that way towards him. Hopefully, that will never happen. You know, I'll be able to humble myself and deal with it at another level. But right now, it's just, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot, brother. It's a lot to deal with when you lose somebody so close to you.
It certainly. And the anniversary is tomorrow. How this has been, what, a year? How long has this been?
2 years now.
2 years now.
Yeah.
And the anniversary is tomorrow. We want to send condolences again to you, your family, and loved ones who, you know, are in mourning over your niece, and the anniversary of her death and murder comes up tomorrow. And this, again, is another reason why we have to push, because we're losing so many great ones to senseless violence. Our future scholars, our future leaders, our future mathematicians, and all of that, we're losing to senseless violence. And it's because of the climate and condition that we did not create. So if there's any other testimonial that can be said as to why we have to build these movements and build them in a real time in a serious way, that's one of them, because we're losing our young to senseless violence out here in
yes,
the streets.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Any closing comments, my brother?
No, that's it, brother. I'm just, like I said, I'm looking forward to September 7th. I mean, that's going to be, I'm going to be representing the new Black Panther Party, and I'm going to be, I'm going to be there doing security and doing whatever else, to keep this moving, and build on it from there. That's what it's about. It's not about just one day. It's about building on it from there, taking that one day and spreading it. And like I said, taking a negative and making it into a positive. That's what that's about. The Million Youth March is
absolutely.
It's a stepping stone, and we're going to build on that. And hopefully, and things will get, we'll elevate from there. Just put it like that, brother. Black power.
Absolutely. Black power. Thank you so much, Brother Supreme, Queens, New York. Keep your head up. Keep struggling. Keep pushing. Keep fighting. We appreciate you and love you, man. Got our arms wrapped around you and the family. Y'all stay strong. Black power.
Thank you, brother. Black power.
Thank you. And that's, again, the reason. The reason why we're pushing is because we're in a serious time. We must save our youth. Now, I'm happy to say that along with Silky Slim, who we expect to call in, we have our young child prodigies. They call the young child prodigy and father on the line with us, Sister Autumn Ashanti. For those of you who may not know, this young, young, beautiful sister, she is on her way to some schools, I think some medical schools, pushing hard. She's matriculating. She's doing it all, boxing and all kind of stuff. Bio reads, it says that she's a young prodigy from the Bronx, and she already speaks 3 foreign languages, Arabic, Swahili, and Spanish. I'm going to read it again, Arabic, Swahili, and Spanish. Her IQ test at 149, better than most college students. Okay, and she's traveled the U.S. performing spoken word, that revolutionary poetry that the Honorable Dr. Carla Muhammad talked about. It's what she does. Autumn Ashanti was homeschooled by her father, and a retired teacher says her father, Brother Ashanti, recognized her talents early on and opted for the homeschooling. Having retired early, he was able to dedicate himself to his daughter's education full time. He said, with the public school system failing in various cities across the country, and especially in Black and Latino neighborhoods, Autumn Ashanti's story may inspire more parents to homeschool their children. And I have to say, absolutely, Sean Kwali, Black Power Radio, we are 100% advocates of homeschool. We know that everybody has not had the chance to do it, for whatever reason, but if we can make it possible and if we can do it, let's homeschool our babies. So they don't have to learn about Christopher Columbus, and they don't have to learn about George Washington, who tell them never told a lie and all this stuff. We want to homeschool our babies so they can know African traditions, they can know their real history, they can learn about themselves. They're not subjected to pagan holidays and things that are force-fed down our children's throats. So we want to welcome at this time to Black Power Radio our great, great comrade and friend and sister and her father, Sister Autumn Ashanti, and father, Black Power. Welcome to the radio broadcast.
Black Power, how you doing?
Doing great, doing great. How are you, sister?
I'm doing well.
Doing well. That's what I'm talking about. Tell us some of the things that you got going on. I know you got a thousand things happening. I know one thing I know about you, you stay pretty busy. And you like me, we just busy about it. Tell us some of the things that you got going on. First of all, tell us who you are. How you got started, and we'll go from there.
My name is Autumn Ashanti. Currently, I'm 16. I just graduated college. I'm going to pre-med school now. And, yes, so I do all of the above, fighting, speaking, activist, student, scholar, everything. I was always ready to do everything. There's no limit to what I can and can't do. So currently right now I'm in the gym doing my boxing with my boxing team. Right now today I registered for classes for the fall, so starting school in the fall. And then also I'm going to start to get my certification for personal training. You know, that's one of the just another career option just to have, just in case, you know, you always have your own dreams, but you always got to have something to fall back on, you know?
Absolutely. Tell us, you're a young black female, you're working your way through the hells of North America. Clearly, your father has been a great, great inspiration to you and a great guiding path. Tell us how it has been for you coming up as a young black female in North America, dealing with some of the pressures and some of the circumstances going on now.
Right now, I mean, the way, you know, me and my father live, we try to keep ourselves detached from the madness that, well, as Daddy says, the Matrix. we try to keep ourselves detached. So, mm-hmm. And the way I was raised, we don't really concern ourselves with worldly issues unless it's absolutely positively necessary. We stay in the temple.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What do you think about a lot of the images that are on TV now of our young black boys, our young black girls? You know, what do you think about the images that are displayed on TV and how it affects our youth today?
Well, actually, first of all, we don't have TV, cable. We have TV. We don't have cable. We haven't had cable for 6 years now, so I can't really go into that. But
okay.
So far, we don't really see, we're completely detached. But right now, the state and the young men and the young women, it's sad. You know, and actually, I really got to thank my father and thank the teachings that he kept me in the temple so that my mind isn't tainted like everyone else. For now, anyway.
We hope to say for sure, but we understand that it's a real struggle out here. Now you say that you're now in boxing and you're doing pre-med. What were some of the things that led you to that course of study and that rigorous of a workout in terms of your boxing regimen and getting prepared for that? Why did you go that way?
Well, we've been doing fitness all my life, and me personally, I find the human body fascinating. So this is just something that I wanted to do. And personal training or pre-med is basically all the same thing anyway. You know, it's just a different way of doing it. So, you know, why not just do the personal training, then do pre-med? It all ties itself together anyway.
So you say put it all together. So it's one thing to you. What have been some of your challenges so far? And we don't hear too many stories, which we love to hear your story. But we don't hear too many stories about young black females or young black males going to pre-med, although you're out here. There are young black males and females out here going to pre-med school, going to med school, going to law school, and doing all kind of things. You know, what has been some of your challenges so far in matriculating, making your way to pre-med school, and what is your future looking like for you?
Currently, what the real challenge issue is the white academia right now. You know, they know who I am, they know what I do, they know the history, and of course, you know, they're going to give me a hard time. So that's struggling with them and trying to maneuver my way through their system isn't exactly what you call easy. I mean, you know, now, you know, this is my third year in the actual school system, so, you know, it's coming pretty easy to get through it now, but, you know, the first parts of it were really difficult. Still is.
Going from being homeschooled all the way up into the college system, what was that like for you? You said that was difficult. What happened?
It was an adjustment because, you know, I'm so used to doing our own thing. We're used to being free, operating on our own frequency, and now we got to work, you know, on their system within their boundaries, their box. And if you try and break out the box, you know, they get all hyper and excited and they try to sign you in it.
Are you talking about academic wise? You talking about socially?
Yeah. The academic and administrative. You know, when I first went in there, they tried to stop me from taking certain classes, certain elevated classes. Oh, you don't have the prerequisites for it. And then when you do the prerequisites, then they change the rules on you and say, oh, no, we said this. You know,
quite
full. You know.
I hear pops. I hear dad signing off in the background. And we want to ask him a few questions too, in just a moment, because it's important. Again, you're listening to Sister Autumn Ashanti. Sister Autumn, we want to ask you now. I know you have a campaign going to help you to get into med school. Can you tell us a little more about that, please?
The campaign is for my medical school because, you know, medical school, very expensive, as many of you know, and sadly to say, during this whole thing, no scholarships have been offered, no historical black colleges have offered any help, no one is offering any kind of real economic help. You know, the support and the love is all beautiful, and I appreciate it very much, but we need economic love, too. So we did a GoFundMe account, and the link is on my Facebook page. Or, of course, you could just go to GoFundMe.com and type in my name, Autumn Ashanti, and all you can make donations there. And, again, it's all paying for the medical school. Really, it's for the summer classes because the financial aid doesn't pay for summer courses. So, basically, we're just raising the money so we'll be able to take summer courses.
Okay, I want to ask you a straight up question. Now, the topic of tonight, we're talking about living the thug life, and we're expected also to hear from, I know you heard Brother Silky Slim, but why did you not end up in a gang? What was it that steered you away from gang activity and gang life and thug life and the streets? What happened in your mind?
Well, number one, which you say a lot, first of all, and then, of course, my father and the way I was raised, and where I was raised. You see, my dad took me out of the throes of those kind of people. He took me away, like I said, he put me in the temple, and here I stay. So for me, being in the temple, you know, I wasn't affected, and I'm not tempted by those kinds of temptations.
So it became a saving grace for you.
Yes.
It became okay. I'm just trying to get it out of you because, you know, you may not think much of it because it's your normal lifestyle. But you got people that's listening to you that really want to know. You got fathers that's listening that want to know how to raise their daughters in a similar fashion or, you know, equal fashion. You got, you know, young women that are listening to you right now that want to know how do I get out of the situation that I'm in. So, you know, this is an important broadcast, and we're pushing up on the Million Youth March on September the 7th. And can you kind of give us your take on the Million Youth March? Why do you feel like it is time now to have a movement for our youth, and what does that mean to you?
It means an upliftment. I think it's more of a thing where I think it's something that our people need, something that our people are starting to really ignore. And, you know, though the conscious people, the so-called conscious people, are aware of it, what about the people who aren't? And I think, you know, all that, you know, we all know about it and we're all excited for it, but there's some people who don't know about it. And we need to stretch and outreach to them. And I think sometimes, you know, we lose ourselves in this conscious movement. I think sometimes we lose ourselves and don't really reach to the people who honestly and desperately need it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are some things, and my final question, what are some things you think that we can do better as a so-called conscious community or whatever movement that we're in to reach the people that need to be reached? What are some things that you see that we have lacked on or missed?
Everything. We'll start with the communication, first off. Communication. We as a people, we don't communicate. You know what I'm saying? We don't come together. We don't talk together effectively. Anytime we really do come together, it's really superficial. You know, when we talk, nothing really gets done. Communication. If you're going to talk or you want to uplift the people, get to it. Don't beat around the bush with it. You know, really get to the meaning of it. I think us as a people, I think that's why we're not where we should be. Other races, when they come together, they get stuff done. When we get together, it's drama and we've thrown it. And no, we're lacking in something crucial.
Something missing. Call that
Yeah. Knowledge
itself. Okay, can we ask your dad a few questions and we'll bring it back in just a second.
Greetings, family. Black Power.
Greetings and Black Power. Now, it's pronounced Brother Batten. Am I right? How do you say it? I don't want to mispronounce it.
It's Batten.
Brother Batten. Okay. Brother Bartine, Brother Bartine and Shonda, welcome to the Black Power Radio. It's an honor to have you on, sir. We have to ask you a couple of questions here because the listening audience wants to know. We want to know. You raised a daughter who is called a child prodigy. This is a name that has followed her. Those of us that follow her career and watch her, that's followed her. And we've heard her give you praise and credit for keeping her in the temple and keeping her out of the throes of the evils of the world. Now just as a father, now just talking as a father, I'm a father, I have daughters myself, and just as a father, how important is it to you that a father, that a man, be in that young black girl's or that young black boy's life in today's time?
That's really, really interesting. I'll start with the point of the young sisters. When I was a younger, littler in the mind and younger in age, I used to watch how young men would harm sisters that lack self-esteem. Some of the brothers would know how to manipulate, threaten young ladies who they felt didn't have a father figure, didn't have brothers or uncles that would come and step to the plate when you got a young man who is not balanced in the head, you know. And so my coming up and seeing this, and after going to the Million Man March, the first one, and when the minister gave us our orders insofar as what are we supposed to do as men, though Autumn wasn't born at that time, I internalized those words. And I understand when the minister was talking about the nation, about the women, and the role of the black men in the lives of our women. It was a done deal for me, brother, insofar as what it was I wanted to do and what I was going to do and what I had to do to keep my little sister at this point in time in her life from being a statistic or being mistreated by brothers who didn't have a clue as to how to treat a young woman, brother. And I wasn't going to allow that to happen. And I wanted to put her in a mental place where you may fall in love with a brother, but still have the wherewithal to have knowledge of self and self-respect first. I don't care how many muscles this dude got. But because his muscles and the lack of his intelligence is not enough for you to be controlled by a fool. And I saw too much of that, brother. And as a father, it was incumbent upon me to make sure that she came out standing at right angles, standing on the square, because I'm laying my palm line and she has to come out resembling and representing a living perpendicular, Bobby, period.
No compromise. No compromise at all in that.
No room to seep in no madness, and the only madness is her own. And so if she falters, it's only going to be because that's what she desired, not because she didn't have her foundation laid with concrete and steel rod. No.
That's interesting. You started out homeschooling her. And what was the decision? Now, of course, I know it's always a joint decision with parents. But
it was no joint decision. Not to cut you off, I'm a single dad. I've had her since she was 11 months old. She started school at 2.5. She went to a language school, an Islamic language school. So at 2.5 years old, because she was potty trained, they took her in pre-K. When Autumn left the program, they graduated her in the third grade at 5 years old. And at 5 years old, Autumn told me, I can't learn nothing else here, Daddy. So we went around like a fool, trying to find the education. And then little sister, we were, trying to find a proper school, no saluting a flat, no pork for lunch. And that's nowhere to be found other than in your own home. Okay? And so as we went and interviewed at a program, and as we are going home, Autumn is 5 years old on the word of Almighty God. What I'm going to say is the God's honest truth, brother. We driving home. Autumn goes, Daddy, why are we riding around to these schools? And I'm looking in the rearview mirror in the back seat, and I'm going, why? She says, why don't you just homeschool me? You can do it. And it was been on from that point, from a five-year-old child, and it was from
that 5 years old
moment. It's been on from there. And never looked
a back. 5-year-old daughter.
5 years old.
5 years old. She
you can do
she had enough. Yes, sir. She had enough belief in her father that her father could teach her.
But brother, you know, like I said, for the first 4 years of her life, we never listened to the radio. All we did was listen to the minister, Dr. Collett, Kwame, Malcolm, you name it. That's all we played with. You know, I had the various speeches with wonderful music and jazz in the background, and that's all I played for the first 4.5 years of her life in my car. Never played the radio. And it had a wonderful effect on her ability to speak and articulate. That was a unexpected surprise that came out of my allowing her to listen to the various leaders and speakers. That was a wonderful thing that I didn't anticipate that came out of it, her ability to speak and how that affected her ability to hear and understand. That was one effect I didn't even plan.
Interesting. What are some of the things that you see parents make as a mistake? Pardon me. What are some mistakes that you see parents make as you, you know, watch the parents groom their children, you having a life within the temple and knowing the teaching? What are some things that you would wish the parents did not do that you see them do normally?
Well, the one thing, this thing can't be helped. You know, it is what it is, you know, they have to work, they have to eat, they have to, you know, take care of their families. And with the family and the father and the mother, if that's a combination in the home, they're removed because they have to work. You see, and then we give our babies over to our enemies like a daycare center, actually. And I see, since we're not paying these teachers in a private school setting, you get what you pay for in the results of your children.
Mm.
Another thing is this cable, man. Why would a parent pay people to kill their children intellectually? You're paying them. You pay cable bills every month to kill your children. Got a flat screen all around the house and got these babies listening and watching Monkey Business. No, thank you. My daughter doesn't have a cell phone. My daughter's PlayStation is a book.
Hmm.
We're not, you know, brother, we have to break the mold. We have to go against everything we thought we knew that was right. And I'm telling you, the results are amazing. Amazing. Get them off that box. Get them off them damn cell phones. Give them limited time on their computers, and take away those electronic crack devices, cell phones, electronic games, and get your baby off the memory called television.
Absolutely.
Stop having your children nurse. And I'm speaking in metaphor, but literally, they're nursing on the memory of madness, brother. And you know when a woman's breast milk is toxic, you know the effect that it has on the baby's body.
Uh-huh.
So what's happening to your babies when they're feeding on the memory of television, man?
That's
right.
What's
happening to the anatomy of your children? No, thank you. You keep that. I'm not paying no white man to kill my daughter.
That's good teaching. What would you say to the you say you're a single father? What were some of the challenges that you had coming up as a single dad for the single dads that are out there listening to you? And what advice would you give to the single brother listening to you out there now, a single parent out there now that's raising his daughter, raising his son, or sons or daughters?
Okay. The biggest challenge I had, first off, was her mother. She lacked vision. She wanted my daughter to be normal. I wanted Autumn to be abnormal. I don't want my daughter walking around normal, because normal children have their pants hanging off their backside, young ladies walking around with thongs backsides, and all kind of other foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
No. So she was the biggest problem. And then she gave, you know, I get turned over custody to me, and then she going to take me and put me before the enemy, talking about I have my daughter in public doing things that she didn't want, meaning poetry, attending conscious lectures, going to some circles, wearing locks, wearing RBG, this was making my child do something she didn't want to do. Can you imagine? So I go before these crackers in this court, and they're going to tell her, the judge sat and told me in my face, I don't agree with a black man raising his daughter, and we're going to do everything to take her out of your care. And praise be for the black community, the Black Panther Party, the Nation of Islam, all of the conscious community, the dread community, the love community, the Spanish community, and every single human being that prayed and came to court for us. Everything I do and I ask of my daughter to do is to everything she does is saying thank you for everyone who believed in her, came to court, supported her. So everything this child is doing, boxing, med school, is to say thank you to the black community for loving her enough and bringing her up on lifted wings, brother. And that's our way and my way and her way of saying thank you, family, for the love, the trust, the belief, and the kindness that you showed us. And everything she's doing, how she's talking, is to say thank you to every single one seen and unseen for your love, man. And so the challenges that the brothers got, excuse me, sir?
Go ahead, Rasta. This is so powerful. Go right ahead.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is, and so the young brothers, if you're a single father, just keep doing it. I'm going to tell you, it's not easy. I may have given the impression that it's easy, but, you know, it's because the ancestors and a lot of the things that I do and doing presently, half the time, I don't even know how I'm doing it because of the simple fact that I'm not doing it in and of myself. I don't even know. I'm going to tell you the truth, and I'm more probably your listening audience to hear this. Half the things I've done with my daughter, how the heck it got done? Because it wasn't from me. It was from the unseen, brother. So half the stuff we're doing, I was just in the co-pilot seat. And there was another force that has taken over and saw to it that this child is doing what she's doing. Again, this is total humble, man. This is nothing that I've done as a man physically.
Right.
These are the ancestors and the Most High guiding this, brother. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The God has his hands on you and your daughter for sure. For sure.
And this is what our brothers who are raising their babies, get along with the mother. You ain't, you know, do what you need to do so that the child is not interrupted. I want to give you a sidebar, if I may. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
I got my nephew's son with me. He's upstairs now. His father passed away just recently from sickle cell anemia. He's a young brother, and I need him to stay with us because I don't want to offend nobody when I say this, but I'm going to just make it plain. This sister cannot raise this young man. She is not equipped to do this. Now, he's been with me over 3 weeks. I've been calling her all day. She ain't home and can't be found, brother. And you wonder why? We're falling apart. Can't be found. Been calling her all day. Been texting the woman all day. No response. As if they're going to tell me the other day, would you like to keep my son? So now I'm in, and, you know, I got the sister over to the other side. Now I have to delve inside the cell and determine what it is I need to do for this little young brother who's 10 years old. So he came downstairs and asked me this morning, how can we do the workout that I can come and live with you in order? The work of God is never done, my friend. Yeah. Sad, ain't it? You with me, brother?
Oh, their call dropped. They'll call back in. But this is such a powerful discussion, as we're still talking about stopping the killing. How do we stop the killing? Those that are living this thug life, or just living dead to the knowledge of self. We want you to get in on the conversation. We know that you, there's many of you that are sitting there listening and waiting right now to get in on the conversation. I'll take some calls, and we'll wait for Brother Batine and Sister Autumn to call back in. We'll take a call at area code 845-706. Area code is 845-706. You're on live. This is Black Power Radio. Welcome to the radio broadcast. Give us your thoughts on living that thug life. How do we stop the killing, raising our daughters? Go right ahead, Black Power.
Black Power, brother. How you doing, Brother Sean? This is Ishmael Shabazz. How you
Black
been?
Power, Brother Ishmael Shabazz. How are you, my brother? Good to hear from you.
I'm doing fine, brother. What we have to do is that brother that just got up off that phone, that's what we have to do, man. If the women don't do it, we as men have to do it. I raised my daughter, and you know, and I'm help raising my grandkids. I'm the one that makes sure that they learn and teach in the schools and whatnot. I haven't questioned the teachers, you know, about the true history. So, you know, we as a people, man, got to stand up, man, and, you know, clean ourselves up and, you know, start standing up and fight. You know, we got to wake them up. You know, I'm in the area. I'm running for alderman in my ward and trying to show these young kids, man, that the only way that we can fight them, man, is get into this same arena with them. I fight for them now. I can fight more if I get a position, man, on the council. Because I'll direct where the money goes to. They don't have programs educational. They have dancing, playing, nothing educational for our kids. And we have to stop as parents, man, and start questioning these programs we're sending our kids to. Schools.
That's right.
We got to monitor what they're doing to our kids. We got to talk to our kids. You know, I know parents is working, but we have to sit and talk to our kids. We want to, man, continue as a strong nation and get back. We got to do that. I was raised like that. I raised my kids like that. You know.
Yes, sir. You have daughters or sons? What's your arrangement?
I have 5 daughters and 2 sons. And raising
daughters, 2 sons.
Yeah, I mean, I had to put an alarm on the house so my girls wouldn't come out. I check on my other school. You know, I threaten niggas. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, because that's how you got to raise your kid. You know, and my daughter's turned out all right. You know, I'm the law, man. Turned out my oldest son, he followed dad's footsteps because I got caught up and hustled. But, you know, like Brother Silky, he was in a car accident. I lost my mom. And she asked me when I was a Panther, what happened? Because I fought against it. How did I do it? So I got it back together. And that's about 20 years, and I'm still fighting. Because somebody got to do it.
That's right.
I'm the one that 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call. I don't get paid for it. But I realize Allah chose me to be his soldier. That's what I'm going to do. I don't have any felonies. I've never been to prison. And it's a blessing and an honor that he saved me to do what I'm doing. So, you know, I try to inspire these young kids. You know, I'm looking forward to me and Youth March. I'm trying to bring some kids. Next week, the brother in Newburgh, the family's having a basketball tournament, you know, to stop the violence. So,
yes,
you know,
sir.
I support them. You know, I got them over in Newburgh wearing Panther wear. You know, because we got to start spreading all over, man, America, man. They wake people up, open up the consciousness. Because it's not, I look at it, man, it's my kid. It's with all the family. If it don't happen to mine, it's happening to somebody else, and then it could happen to mine.
Right.
So, you know, we have to, you know, I look at the female. I teach my daughters that, you know, you want a man that you can have a conversation with. An intelligent conversation, not laying up with them, because the stupid nigga, man, is not going to get you nowhere. And you can, I told my one daughter that I raised that you do it for yourself. You don't need no man. You don't need a man. And you go out there, man, and go to school, get your education, man, and do what you got to do. And she has.
Yes, sir.
So alhamdulillah, you know, I'm still here to see it. I hope to be here to see. I'm a great grandfather as well. with my grandkids, and they got two girls. So it's just I'm
father
I'm
and a
girls,
father and a great grandfather, and
yeah.
Running for all of
and
it.
You know something, I love it. I'm an advocate, but sometimes I have to turn my phone off and spend time with my family. So my wife says, you know, you're always helping everybody else, but you got a family, so you know, and she's right. So I gotta stay close to home and spend that family time, you know. Not just, you know, to school, but do things with my grandkids, man. Have fun with them. You know, they see Papa, man, silly sometimes, and nobody else sees. But that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, so we just have
yes,
to
sir.
Encourage our kids. We got a lot of young kids, man, that's taking care of their babies. I see it, and I give them brothers, man, a Black Power salute, a lot of them, because I tell them, they say it don't happen. But there's a lot of them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm trying to get them to stay off the streets. There's another way, husband. You don't have to sell drugs. You got a talent. So I'm trying to get these brothers in the music thing. Get some conscious music. That's
absolutely.
Because they got our kids confused. Tell a live vision and the music. You know,
that's
and
right.
Program that way. And our
that's
kids
right.
Feed into it. And we as parents allow it to play in the game. They wonder why our kids are killing because we let them play games.
That's right.
And
we,
they don't
we
know
get,
what's
get
real
their,
and
get their minds messed
really,
up.
Yeah, their minds is messed up. You know, young kids. But you know, something is happening to theirs too. White folks.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
To theirs. It's
crossed
mistake,
over.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. But I'm concerned about mine right now because I'm the one still in the prison, the jail. I see it.
Tell us a little more about you about. You running for alderman? How can we support you in your run for council? We got to move to some more cars. We want to get this information in, though.
Okay, you know, I think I sent you one of the flyers I had. Just spread it, man. You know, what I'm on page just to support what I do, because that's what scares them. Because I just don't have being Kingston. I'm elsewhere, everywhere, and as long as they know that I have support. And they know it's real. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get a debate going with the other candidates right now. And, you know, they're trying to shy away, but that's my strength. This is my community. The community know me.
That's
so
right.
My interest, man, is saving
that's community
lives,
based.
Man. So,
yes, sir.
You know, brother,
what's
you
the Facebook?
You know,
what's the email? What's the information?
Me?
I said, what's the Facebook? What's the email?
At Facebook. My email address is Baitul, BAITUL 1 at AOL.com. That's BAITUL 1 AOL.com.
All right.
And
when is the election?
There's a primary. Since there's three of us, there's a primary September 10th and then November 5th. That's when the election is. So there's four of us running. So if I win, then I go for that seat.
All right.
And I've got a 85% chance of winning.
Yes,
so
sir. You got to clear the way. You got to clear
okay.
the way. Anybody
yeah.
that's near Kingston, near that area of New York, vote Ishmael Shabazz. You vote Ishmael Shabazz for alderman, Ishmael Shabazz for council. This is a man who served with the Black Panther Party in his teens, a man who is now working and serving in the Kingston area on behalf of the Black Power Movement. He's working to uplift our people, and he ain't sold us out, and he won't sell us out. And so go to his Facebook, Ishmael Shabazz on Facebook. Give him an email, and most importantly, give him our support and our love. Brother Ishmael, we love you. We appreciate you. Keep the fight going. Keep the fire burning, brother. Thank you for your sacrifice.
All right, brother. Black Power, man. Love y'all.
All right, love you too, brother. Black Power, Black Power. That's Ishmael Shabazz. He's running for council in Kingston, New York, and he's a man that's working with the youth. Again, another youth worker, a father and a grandfather, a man who has raised boys, raised girls. He's raising them, and he's putting them on the square out there. See, this is a good show, and this is not to bash the sisters because we know that the sisters and the mothers have held it down way longer than the brothers have. We're not bashing you at all. We're just celebrating the Black family and we're pushing towards the National Black Family Convention. I just wanted to say and give the balance to it that there are brothers out here that are taking care of their business and taking care of their children. And their sisters out here handling plenty of business and taking plenty of business with them babies. So we appreciate you all. Let me get to another caller in. Sister Adam Ashanti and Brother Batine are going to try to call back in. They tell me that their phone is acting crazy. They were in the middle of their talk, but they're going to try to call back in here momentarily. We'll keep taking your calls on this issue of how to stop the killing. And we're talking about our youth living this thug life. Remember, we're pushing towards the Million Youth March. This is the 15-year anniversary, and this is a movement. And so we need your participation. We really want to formulate some plans here on this radio broadcast so that we can finalize what we're going to do to get our youth off of these corners, out of these jails, from stop living this whatever the thug life, the drug life, or whatever we're doing. You know, Brother Batine said he wouldn't even let Sister Autumn watch any TV at all, really. No cable TV at all. He said her PlayStation was a book. He put her through a revolutionary boot camp. Her entertainment was Dr. John Henry Clark and Baba Ashraf Kwesi, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, and so on and so forth. And you see the results versus when we let our babies watch these Hannah Montanas and, you know, these Disney channels and Nickelodeons and everything else. And we're talking about saving black youth, so we got to talk about saving their minds. Next call here is Eric Code 931-561. 931-561, you're on live. This is Black Power Radio. Welcome to the radio broadcast. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was calling in because I got this number from one of the Black Panther members. Because I have been discussing some things with them in my hometown that was going
right
on. And one of the things is my brother was murdered. And we had no justice at all whatsoever. And ever since he's been murdered, he was actually shot 7 times in the back and once in the back of the head. Didn't know it was coming or anything. Well, the guy went to jail and everything. He did 8 months and was released. Okay, this guy shot my brother in the crowd in a park in front of 1,500 people. Well, when he was released, we protested and everything about, you know, not having any justice or anything. Well, the justice system at the courthouse, they tried to scare us off, me and my mom, my family, because we protested to the end, and we're still doing it right now today. As a matter of fact, last week on the 5th, it made 6 years that he's been dead. We have been trying to get a hold to Al Sharpton for these whole 6 years, him, anybody that we could, basically trying to let somebody hear our voice and let them know what was going on here. Well, we have now been receiving, because we protested last week, last Monday. Well, we now have been receiving threats again. Right after my brother got killed, then I was receiving threats on my phone. I mean, calling, being called all kinds of names, different times of the day and night, and you know, now it's my mom. My mom, they're calling my mom's phone, telling them they're going to kill the family and this and that because we're protesting. And what it is we've been signing, we've been writing petitions out, and we've been handing them out all over the community to stop the violence. You know what I'm saying? And basically, I guess maybe we're rubbing the people the wrong way or something, because when we gave a petition, that's when we started receiving threats again on our life. So I was told,
what city is this? What city is all this happening in, sister?
This is in Kentucky.
Okay.
And then within the last 8 months, we had 3 unsolved murders that they're not solving any murders at all whatsoever. Like, we're just letting everything slide. Well, my brother, his death and his trial was a capital murder trial when he was killed. And it's like now, every time we protest now, at first they didn't want us down there, but they couldn't stop us. We was going to still continue standing, trying to represent my brother to let the people know that, you know what I'm saying, people that didn't know that we have no justice, no peace. And now, like last night, my mom received threatening messages on her life that they were going to kill the family and this and that, call my mom all kind of, you know, names that they shouldn't be calling them. And telling them we're going to put her to sleep permanently. We, none of us should be walking the face of this earth. And listen, that police did not try to stand behind us whatsoever. Not at all. They never tried to stand behind us within the whole situation at all. And right now, today, since we've been getting these pertinent phone calls and everything, we've contacted the police department. Well, we contacted the police department yesterday, and it's like we're getting a runaround. Because, they, I mean, then today my mom went to the police department in Louisville, Kentucky, because that's where she lives at. But our hometown is in Hopkins, and my brother's trial was actually held here. And it's just like a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of injustice going on here in our community alone. And when I was talking to one of the guys, the guys from Louisville earlier today, he was telling me that, you know, about other things going on up here, but my brother's murder was on the hush because they didn't want nobody to know what had happened. And, I mean, basically,
right,
we're just trying to get some kind of, we're trying to get our voices heard, because as long as we keep laying down and just taking it, the system is going to continue, they're going to continue to, you know, just keep on doing us any kind of way they want, because they're failing us. And
well,
that's the reason why they don't want us on the courthouse step protest, because we're an embarrassment to them. And that's what I feel
well,
like.
You in luck by the grace of God. Nothing happens but by God's permission. But I'm able to say that I'm based in Louisville. This is my first time hearing other situation at all on what's going on. Like you said, it had to have been hushed up. But what we'll do is you take my number and take our number and get in touch with me ASAP as soon as you can, and we can organize, because I don't know what the conditions were for the release of the killer of your brother. I don't know how they justified that. We'll maybe have to talk about that off air. But anytime that you know the victims have to run to the police departments, especially in what I call Klantucky, you're gonna run into some bumps in the roads and some forks in the roads, because it's business to them. It's business to warehouse us in the penitentiaries and jails, and it's business to them to put us into the funeral parlors. So we got to defend ourselves. What I would say to you is to arm yourself or harm yourself. Make sure that you have all your defense capabilities up to par, and that you're always on the alert. And take my number. Do you have a pen and pencil ready?
So I do have a pen and pencil handy.
Okay. Let me know when you got it.
Okay, I'm already. I have it in hand.
All right. It's, of course, the area code, you know, is 502. It's 758.
Uh-huh.
7785.
Okay, that's 502-758-7785.
Yeah, call that number, and I'm Sean Kwali, Sean Saddam Kwali. New Black Panther National spokesman. Get in touch with me and those of us who are based here in Louisville and the central region. We're going to work with you and secure some justice for your family. Really, just get you some kind of security.
I found you on Facebook, and
right,
I talked to you on my inbox. And I talked to Hakeem earlier.
You on the move.
My mom talked to. So me and my mom was on the phone with him for about 2 hours, and he actually told me my mom today that he heard about the petitions that we had put out. He said he heard about that. Somebody gave him one years ago when it first happened.
Uh-huh.
And actually, you know, we're still giving them out. We've been giving them out for the whole 6 years that we've been doing this. And it's like now they're trying to scare us off again and threatening our lives and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what we don't want. And now it means that my mom, this is her hometown in Hopkinsville. My mom is having to, like, now when she comes home, she left last week going back to Louisville because her life is threatened. Okay, but now when she comes home, I have an aunt that passed away. Then, you know, the funeral is tomorrow. My mom's not even coming because, you know, she don't know who this is, and she's going to have to, you know, watch her back because she don't know. You know what I'm saying? And then she's having to change different vehicles because everybody knows her car. You know, it's pathetic. You know, it's getting out of hand.
Well, you call me, sister. You call me when we get off this radio broadcast so we can talk further offline, because we don't want to talk all our plans over the line.
Why?
But if you've already talked to Minister Hakeem, who's here with me, and you got my information, and we'll link in with some others. We're gonna put you some security for us together. So just call me when we get off this line, sister.
Okay.
All right. Peace and blessings and Black power.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, too. All right. And we're talking about defending the youth, and that's important. We're talking about defending the youth, and that is a part of That is a part of defending our people. So we must use every instance available to defend our people. Let me get the call back here with Sister Autumn Ashanti and Brother Bateen. Autumn Ashanti and Brother Bateen, they're back on the line. We want to make sure they get in here. There was some phone issues going on. And so they're back, and we're glad to have them back, and they're black. Welcome back to the radio broadcast. Brother Bateen, Sister Autumn Ashanti, you with us?
Yeah, man, I don't know what happened. I think NSA was in there on that one.
Okay, well, you were dropping too much information about how we can save our young girls and our boys, and sometimes it pisses the devils off. But, you know, by God's grace, we're able to keep pushing. So let's try to pick up where we left off. Of course, we want to get you in on the call. They got callers on the line. They want to ask you some questions because, again, this is an intriguing topic that all of us have to get into, saving our youth, saving our boys, saving our girls. But you were just talking about that you had cut off the cable television, that your daughter's PlayStation was a book, that you had taken her out from all of that situation. You talked about the struggles you had with her mom. You talked about the issues with your son. Your son wanted to live with you, and that's where we left off at.
So
we kind of.
Yeah, well, he's not my son. He's my nephew's son, who his father just passed
your
away 3 weeks ago. Passed away from sickle cell. And so little
yes,
man
sir.
Is laying with us. And I guess after seeing how we doing things, because he went to register with her today, he was like, yo, this is where I need to be. I want to stay with you, and I don't want to go back home. Don't send me back home.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Nah. Okay. You still with me?
Woo. Yeah, I'm with you, Baba.
All right.
I'm here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Just having a little... Yes, sir. Just want to make sure that the phones is good here. Make sure that the phones is good. Are you up for some calls, Brother Bateen? Brother Bateen?
I'm here, sir.
Okay, yes, sir. I was going to say we're going to take some calls. We're going to take some calls and get them in on this conversation.
Let's go.
All right. First, Eric Cole, 504-432, 504-432, you're online, Black Power Radio. We're talking right now to Brother Bateen, Sister Autumn Ashanti, talking about saving our youth, stopping the killing. Give us your question, your comment. Welcome to the conversation.
Black Power, Brother Sean.
Black Power, my brother.
Okay, Black Power. Now, I have a comment. But I was listening at Tupac when he did an interview and he was in jail, and they asked him about what can he do about what was going on in the black community, and he was saying this. He said that we should have community programs for the youth where they can come in and, you know, come in, do their homework. We should have, like after school programs, like athletics and stuff like that, where they can work that aggression out. Because seeing in our communities, we don't have all of that, and see a lot of these young guys, they're looking for a father figure. Father's not in the house, you know, so they turn to the streets. So the drug dealers, they become what they're looking for, but it's the wrong way. So that's why, Brother Sean, I want to join in the movement where I can help some of these little young brothers, letting them know this is not the way, you know, because it's gonna lead you in the grave or in jail, you know, and you don't want that. And another thing, the young lady was saying about the police not doing nothing. We have to police our own communities, you know. Can't look for the police to do everything. We have to police our communities. When we see things going down, we have to stop that. It's like
we've been trained for that. Go ahead. I won't cut you off.
Okay, because I was looking at one of those documentaries. Matter of fact, you need to get that Bastards of the Party, and it was talking about those gangs and stuff like that. Matter of fact, many people don't know the gangs started off as a protection group. But what happened was they used to fight off these white supremacists, but then when a lot of the whites start moving out the areas and they turned their attention to fighting one another.
Absolutely.
But, I was going to say that we've
been trained that way to believe that the police are there to serve and protect. That's their motto. That's what they say they do. They're there to, according to them, restore law and order. We just have not been told who they're restoring law and order for and who they're serving and protecting because it's not us. It's not our community. And so, you know, I don't blame our people for that conditioned response, and it is good. And what you're saying, we do have to control our own communities, patrol our communities. It just has to move past the rhetoric. It has to move past, you know, the talk of what we have to do. And we got to form, you know, well-regulated legal militias, as they say, or well-regulated armed legal bodies that would defend the people. And that's what gave birth to the Deacons for Defense and gave birth to the Black Panther Party and gave birth to SNCC. That same idea, where we had to defend our people. And so it's here today, and clearly the conditions are there today. But you got to have people with the courage that'll do it, my brother. And so, you know, those that have that spirit to defend and God has blessed you with that initiative to defend, you got to step up, and we got to step up.
Yeah, brother, because it's just so much stuff going on. And, you know, I think what we need to do, we need to – go into communities and talk to these young brothers. Talk to them. If you can catch one or maybe two of them attention, you didn't done something. You're not gonna save everybody, but you know, we go into communities and we talk to some of these people. See, a lot of times, many of the elders that was in the movement back then, they don't sit back and try to teach none of the younger people what was going on back at that time, you know. And it kind of distanced us. From the elders. See, many times the elders, they don't understand what's. Everything is the same, but many of these elders, they don't understand what's going on. You know, because you're dealing with a different generation now. Things is not like how it was 50 years ago. Things didn't have changed. See, now you got this with the drugs and everything. You got all this hard drugs and stuff like that. And that's what really tore up the community. But I think we need to just go out there and we need to educate and talk to the people and not be these poverty pimps that's running around in here saying one thing and then we're doing something else.
It has to be understood that our enemy is a live enemy, that we're not fighting against forces that are inanimate or, you know, some theoretical force, but that when we organize for freedom and we organize for self-defense, you have a live enemy that is organizing to counter your organization, or as they say, counter your intelligence, a COINTELPRO. And so, yeah, crack cocaine, the hard drugs, as we talked about in the beginning, the guns in the community, all of that was a offensive and an assault against our community, and we have to look at it as such. And so, as the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad used to always say, we got to place the blame squarely where it belongs. We can't take credit, you know, for what the devil or what these enemies have done to us, but we for darn sure got to fight it, reject it, and resist it. So you're absolutely right, brother. And I hope that you can take that spirit and push it all through Louisiana and help brothers like Silky Slim and others.
Yeah, because matter of fact, brother, I'm trying to work on trying to get this chapter started here in New Orleans. You know, I just want to go out there and just help these young brothers out, just try to help them, you know. Those who want help, those who want it.
Certainly. That's the spirit.
Well, brother, I got to make a donation to that Million Youth March, brother, and like Tupac said, we got to make changes.
Got to make a change. Yes, sir. To make a donation for those who, and thank you so much, brother, for your call. Thank you so much, and black power to you.
Black power, soul power.
And soul power. For those that are interested in making a donation to the Million Youth March, you can go to paypal.com. You use the email attorney.shabazz@yahoo.com to make it simple. attorney.shabazz@yahoo.com. And donate whatever you want. Donate what you can. We got all kinds of needs and expenses to make this movement a success. We're going again from the 5th through the 8th, so you can imagine the kind of expense that we're going to incur. So help how you can and give from what God has blessed you to be able to receive. Brother Bautin, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here, brother.
All right, brother. Still here. You were, yes, sir. You were making a point, and Sister Autumn, I hope she's still with us. You were making a point, on the trials and tribulations that you were having, and so we're walking with you through this journey. And I just wanted to ask you, and I wanted to bring Sister Autumn back here in a minute. What do you see in the Million Youth March, and why would you encourage our people to participate in the movement and participate through the National Black Family Convention? What's your take on that?
Well, I was there from the very first one with Dr. Collett. When the Popo came and started acting foolishness with the helicopters flying down the middle of the street. The second one in Brooklyn, Autumn was a speaker. She did a poll. So she's been a part of this from the word go. Actually, when Autumn was like, I'd say about a year old, when Dr. Collett used to have his meetings at the National Black Theater, I used to bring Autumn there. Dr. Collett used to hold her in his arms. You know, Malik will remember, Brother Divine, a lot of the brothers remember when I used to have Autumn in my arms. So she's been a part of this all of her life. So,
right.
You know, it's just in her nature to be a part of this. It's something that cannot be done. So, I mean, her role in this is to motivate the young. I think now that she has a valuable message, you know, by being a living example, you know, my message and her message is that our babies are languishing too long in their school. There's no way these babies should be going there until they're 17, 18, 19 years old. I got a friend, her son is 20 years old, brother. He's in the 12th grade.
At 20 years old,
and he's in the 12th grade. And then one of my daughter's associates, I believe it said this in another interview, her best friend is a third-degree black belt, and she's an instructor in the dojo. 14 years old, she's going to be on the bill doing the martial arts exhibition. The point I'm making about that is she's just a year younger than Autumn, and she's going into the ninth grade. Autumn is doing pre-med at 15. Do you see what I'm trying to say? I need to get the message out, and I want to talk about it in the workshops on what it is we can do. We could take these babies out of school if the parents got enough guts and enough courage and enough belief in their babies. I can give you the formula how to take your babies right out of high school right now, tell you what to do, and your babies will qualify to go to college. And you can start off in a community college. You don't need to go to one of those highfalutin money-grubbing institutions. You can start off and get 100 credits in a community college and transfer all of them over to a major college and just do 1 year or one semester and come out with a BA degree. I can tell you everything you need to know. For free.
That's what we need. That's what we need. Brothers and sisters, you're hearing it here first. We're talking about September the 7th, Million Youth March, talking about the 5th through the 8th. If for no other reason you come to this event, you've heard it here first, Brother Bateen's going to give you the formula on how to graduate your children and graduate yourselves through the college system and get your PhD degrees and all of that. He's going to tell you. He's going to tell you the formula how to pull them out the schools and homeschool the children. This is reasoning why we should be there. Brothers and sisters, Brother Bateen, I'm going to take another call here in the lines. They want to ask you questions. They want to ask me questions. We'll go to area code 313-869. 313-869. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Brother Bateen, Sister Autumn Ashanti, and me, Sean Saddam Kwali. Welcome to the radio broadcast of Black Power.
Sean Kwali.
Area code 313. Yay, every call 313, you're open. Go right ahead.
Naeem Jalil Shabazz.
Brother
first
Naeem.
Off, I want to offer you an brother.
It's hard to hear you. Say that one more time.
I said I'd like to offer you an apology. Reach me. And I'm one of your soldiers, man, so I found that to be unacceptable, and I apologize.
Okay. I think you said I was trying to reach you, but your phone was breaking up.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to move somewhere where I can get some clear reception right now.
Okay. Okay, say it one more time. Let's see if we can hear you.
Can you hear me now? Am I a little clearer?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can.
All right, yeah. It's Naeem Jalil Shabazz.
Hey, Black Power.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, you was trying to reach me about a couple weeks ago. I was down in the Bahamas checking on my queen and my child, but I'm a soldier of yours, and that's unacceptable, so that's my apology on my behalf. But
you a soldier of God first and foremost, and a soldier in this mission. And but I, as your brother, I accept your apology and I salute you, and it's all right. We keep moving. What's on your mind, black man?
Brother, I was hearing y'all talk about all this killing and this violence that was going amongst our people, man. And I just wanted to say that in today's society, you know, we stuck in a system of violence. But not just violence. That violence is a byproduct of our poverty. Now, you can look anywhere else where there's black people and there's poverty, like Haiti and certain areas of Africa, and you will find that violence follows that. You know what I'm saying? But how can we get out of this rut that we stuck in, and we crying about, you know, the violence going on here and there, but we still in the poverty? You know how it's hard to make a conscious decision on an empty stomach, and that empty stomach just might provoke somebody to go out and get that food by any means necessary, even if it's an action taken against your own people. How can we get out of that?
Brother Batin, Sister Ashanti, you want to answer that question, Sister Autumn?
Brother, it is just, you know, I really don't have nothing to say about how brothers and sisters just showing the lack of love and the lack of self-appreciation or appreciation for one another, brother. I don't have a comment, man, because it's at, you know, this thing is in, you know, now at epidemic proportions right now, and I really don't have anything to offer in so far as what can be done, how we could go about it. We didn't talk, we didn't march, we didn't sat in, we didn't build. But the minister didn't came. Dr. Pollard tried. Malik is trying. Elders are trying, people before them have tried, and something is wrong. I don't know if it's in the air, if it's in the water, if it's in the food. I don't even know if it's in the very genetic makeup of our young brothers and sisters these days, man. I really don't know what to offer insofar as how we can even begin to approach to get us to love and embrace one another, man.
Right.
I really don't have a clue, man. So, you know, before I can come out with work, I want it to start in my home first, and then it's going to be reflected outward. You know, I don't want to be like that preacher who's trying to save the world and his whole house is going to hell. So
any
ideas that I may have to offer to that, I want it to be reflected in my home first. And then I can reflect it outdoors, brother, because I, you know, that's like asking a black, grown-ass black man walking with his children and his butt crack showing. You understand what I'm saying? I mean,
I understand.
Yeah, man, I can't offer anything to get these brothers right now. I mean, verbally anyway.
Make clear where the mind state was. If you can envision this, a pack of rats, and they stuck somewhere, as if they stuck in a hole. Mm. It's going to be a pack of rats, and when there's nothing left to eat, they're going to
eat
each other. Now, it might
be
one rat in that pack who might make the conscious decision to change, but you know what? The other rat's going to eat him.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's very true.
We saying stop.
That's
killing,
very true.
And it's too many of us who is side of that, on the negative side and on the positive side. So we would be that rat who's conscious. But society, you know, society's impression go towards the least resistance. They're going to be the rats that's doing all the eating.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, your phone was breaking up, but we got the point on exactly what you were saying, and that's a very, very true analogy. Of being down in that hole and all the rats running out of food, and they're going to start eating each other. That's exactly what's happening. That's what we're talking about when we're saying that we've been put in a capitalistic situation or a bloodsucker situation where the rich are getting rich and the poor are getting poorer. And so the poor turn on each other. Like I said, the poor rob the poor. The rich rob the poor and the poor rob each other. Remember that. The rich rob the poor rob each other. But if we can't start anywhere, like Brother Bateen said, we start in our own homes first. We start in our own homes. There's a song they sing deep in the South that I heard as a young boy. It says, sweep around your own front door before you try to sweep around mine. And so we start home. We make sure that our home is tight. We make sure our homes is revolutionary. We make sure our homes are together. And then we spread outward. And when we move outward, as we move the movement forward, we got to always remember to give our people a knowledge of self. The reason why we are destroyed and what we lack is a knowledge of our history, our culture, and who we are as a people. We lack that. And so that causes us to self-destruct, because even if we were in the hole together as rats, if we all knew who we were in that hole, we would unify together and pull each other up out of that hole. So that's what I'd say to you, brother Naeem, and concurring with what brother.
Think,
yes,
I think you think I could just offer an opinion on my one solution to this whole thing.
Certainly.
I think that. Do you know who Dwight York was? The lead minister,
yes,
of the Nubian Moors.
Absolutely, the Nubian Nation.
That's right. He had his own little community where the people who wanted to change moved to somewhere down in Georgia before they snatched them up. I think that we should get together, those who are able to become homeowners, and buy our own community and expand outward. If we had our own community of the blacks who was doing the positive, even the ones who may not be 100% on our channel or on our wavelength, they would want to move there too, if not for anything but just the peace, you know? And then from that,
you know,
we would
what?
Have a black community, you know what I'm saying, written of all this destruction and killing we was talking about earlier, and more, but we would have to get those who had the funds to do so, and we would all live in that community, and then from there on,
you know what?
Expand and grow.
I'm going to tell you something, and it's not far-fetched. Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, before he passed, was thinking, and he was along the same lines of thinking as to what you had right there. He was buying up property in Atlanta, Georgia, and outside of Atlanta, and he was going to basically move the entire, as many of the new Black Panther members at that time as he could, down into Atlanta as a base, or as a almost like a compound. He had moved them next to, he bought the land, bought some land that was next to Dr. Malachi York and his compound down there. And it was at that time bought by the actor Wesley Snipes. A lot of people don't know that. I'm giving some people some history. But Wesley Snipes had purchased that land from Malachi York. He was studying down there. And the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad also had land next to Malachi York that he was going to build a Black Power base down there. And, you know, it was basically going to be an all-purpose kind of communal living, solidified with the community of Dr. Malachi York and others. And so it's not far-fetched. And many people believe that, you know, those who say the doc was moved on believe it was for that reason, because he was solidifying his Black Power base.
Right.
it's not far-fetched. And so, I mean, we have plenty of examples in history, whether we're talking Black Wall Street or what have you, our times during our Reconstruction as a people, where we've come together and had our own communities and it's been solid. So it's not like it can't be done or it hasn't been done. It's just, I don't think it's proposed enough. I don't think that those who push reparations for our people, I don't think we push reparations of land enough. I think it translates to many as a monetary value, you know, or just getting as the Black Project used to say, some reparation rims. But we're talking about land and land ownership, so it's not far-fetched, bro. I think we just got to push it.
Right.
Yes, sir. We just got to push it. But, Brother Naeem, thank you so much, brother, for your call. I'm always honored, and I'm always glad to hear from you, brother. And, yeah, you got to keep in touch with us. If you're back in Michigan, and we gotta link up.
Brother, anytime, call me. come running.
All right. I got you. I got your number. You know, I'm going to contact you.
I'm your soldier.
Get it. You know, you already went up. Well, you know, you're the mission. So I don't want to make it personal because then it becomes personality. But I appreciate that spirit. We soldiers for the people, for black people. And so I appreciate you, brother Naeem. You stay strong, brother. Hold it down in Michigan. I'll be in touch with you pretty soon, Black.
Yes, sir. Black power, black love.
All right. Black power, black love. That's brother Naeem checking in with us from Michigan. He's out there in Michigan. He's up north. Right there in the D up north, and that's family. But brother Bateen, Sister Shanti, still with us?
Everybody here, brother. We here.
All right. And so, brother's talking about we gotta live together. And I appreciate you giving an honest answer too. Just saying, I don't know what to say to people. I appreciate you giving that answer. Let me take another call here. All right, I'm calling from area code 347-217. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Sister Autumn Ashanti, Brother Bateen Ashanti, Sean Saddam Kweli, Black Power. Welcome to the radio broadcast. Hey, 347-217, your mic's open. You got a question or comment before we move on? All right, we'll move on. Area code 214-672, you're on live, Black Power Radio, Brother Bateen, Sister Autumn Ashanti. Go ahead with your question or comment in Black Power.
Hey, Black Power, Brother Sharp, Kweli, Brother Spring, Captain Deputy National MOD of the New Black Panther Party. Hey, this is indeed a blessing as well as a privilege to tune in tonight. The Brother and Sister Ashanti, this brother here that you hear live in the Ashanti region, and I bring y'all greetings from my queen, Princess Layla, and my son, Collins Jr. Brothers, I got to give all praise to due to a lot. Ever since Brother Collins taught me well, he said each one going to have to teach one. And you teach a woman, you teach a village. So ever since we're doing a lot of preaching and teaching tonight, so we're all on one call and getting ready for the meeting in March. Like to bring everybody
yes, sir.
From our leader there, Dr. Shirley Malik Zulu Shabazz, the warrior lawyer who's ever lost the case, who's on a mission for our people. And we'd like to thank you, brothers and sisters, for listening and enjoying. I just got to, you know, put my little two feet in and say, Brother Sean Kweli, I've never heard a bad broadcast you did. And every time I listen to your voice, I'm more inspired, more so. And by having the Ashanti's in on this tonight, say, I got to go put on my kids here and get my Ashanti silver to walk around and let everybody know I'm proud to be in the Ashanti. And whatever y'all do, let's keep black power alive. Black power, black power, black power, brother.
Black power, black power, black power. Thank you, my brother, for those inspiring words. We appreciate you checking in from the Ashanti region, being a man who is an international man. This is Brother Hakeem Muhammad, Supreme Captain in the New Black Panther Party. He's an international man all through Africa and different parts of the world, speaks different languages. And so he's a very seasoned brother, security for the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, security for our National Chairman, Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, black man got it going on. Look forward to seeing you at the march, my brother. Look forward to seeing you at the march in the movement. Yes, sir. Keep spreading the word.
And we hope that everything will be great, and we're making sure that everybody want to be early and on time because we don't want to leave anybody behind and leave them out on the blessing that they'll get for being there at the meeting you fought. Now, our Black Seven Conference, Black Power, sir.
All right, Black Power. Thank you so much for the call. Next caller here is calling from a private number. If you have your number blocked, we're going to open you up. Your mic is open. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Sister Autumn Ashanti, Brother Bateen Ashanti, and Sean Saddam Kweli. Go ahead, caller, with your question. Private number. Is your number blocked? If you got your number blocked, your mic is open. All right, we'll move forward. Sometimes private lines can be tricky. Sometimes they just listen. Don't want you to get their information, I guess. All right. Next number here, Yeri Coast, 862-252. 862-252. You're on live, Black Power Radio, and I'm your host. Go ahead with your question or comment, Black Power.
Hotep family, this is Dashaun Farad.
Hotep, Black Power.
Brother Bateen and Sister Autumn, it's always a pleasure to hear from you. I just wanted to say briefly for those, Brother Sean, for your listeners in the New York area, tomorrow the Million Youth March Organizing Committee, as well as Black Lawyers for Justice, will be having a press conference in Harlem, New York, at the Adam Clayton Powell Building at 12 p.m. on the second floor in the conference room, in the news conference room, and that was it.
Announce that one more time for those that may have missed it.
Okay, yes, in Harlem, New York, tomorrow, August 13th, at noon, there will be a press conference being held by the organizers of the Million Youth March and Black Family Convention. The convener of the Million Youth March and Black Family Convention, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, will be addressing the press conference, and they'll be discussing next month's events as well as the controversial stop and frisk policy that was just ruled today by a federal court judge as being unconstitutional. So if you're in Harlem, that'll be at or New York City tomorrow, please be there at the Adam Clayton Powell State Building on 125th Street and Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard. And you can also
all
check
right.
us out, MillionYouthMarch2013.com.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Brother Deshaun Farad. Entrance there with Your Black World, world journalist. What's your other? You got so much stuff happening. What's more things you got going on?
Brother Sean, you only have 5 minutes left, brother. I don't think I can condense it like that. But you said it right, brother. Your Black World and the Movement Magazine and some other things, brother. But we'll leave it at yourblackworld.com for now and the movementmagazine.net. But let's get this, you know, I'll see you all next month. It's on to the Million Youth March as well as the Black Family Convention.
Forward to the Million Youth March and National Black Family Convention. Thank you so much, Brother Deshaun Farad, Your Black World. We thank you so much, brother. That's tomorrow at 12 noon, Adam Clayton Powell, State Office Building up there, with our National Chairman, Attorney and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, press conference on stop and frisk. There's some violations that have happened with this outdated stop and frisk law that's on the books there. And we've told you from the beginning, our national chairman has told you, the movement has told you, Media March organizers have told you, we will challenge stop and frisk. It will be challenged in New York. Haven't seen too many other people stand up and challenge it in a bold way, in a real way. And this is the time to challenge it. Stop and frisk is no different than stand your ground. It's no different than the past laws of apartheid. It's the same stuff. And so we're going to challenge stop and frisk. We're going to challenge stand your ground, all these laws. You got to be willing to fight and put up a fight. And so that's 12 noon tomorrow, Harlem, New York, Adam Clayton Powell Building, 125th. Listen, New York is the place to be. But if you cannot make it to New York, what you can do is use your network. Use your networking skills to spread the word. Like Deshaun Farad, Brother Deshaun Farad said, you can spread the email, Million Youth March 2013. You can go to the Facebooks. You can, just tell people. Take one of the flyers. Go, email me. And I'll give you a flyer to send out, a press packet to send out. You can do things where you are if you're not in New York. We want to have a movement built and moving way before September the 7th. The movement's already here. And so thank you so much, Brother Deshaun Farad. We'll take another call here. Area code is 478-231. 478-231. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Brother Bateen Ashanti, Sister Autumn Ashanti, Sean Saddam Kwali, and your family and the radio listening audience. Go ahead with your question or comment. We're talking about stopping the killing. What's your thoughts on it?
Hey, how you doing? I'm Brother Tabari.
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
How you doing? I'm one of the young people that's tuning in tonight, so I'm going to give you my opinion as a young black male on the situation.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's what we need.
Like, our generation is lost nowadays. You had the people in the 60s and 70s sticking together, but nowadays it's completely lost. Young people nowadays not going to stick together like we did way back then, because it's a whole lot of ignorance going on and nobody's leading them the right way. You had a lot of leadership growing up back then where a lot of people were sticking together. But nowadays, I believe it's up to the black celebrities to get the youth involved, because that's what you look up. Oh, you don't have parents nowadays that's they send their children, teaching their children right from wrong because they too busy trying to keep their household together or pay bills. They don't have time to do that. So the kids out in the streets, that's what they're learning from. And if no old heads is going to sit and take the time out here to sit us down and lead us the right way, it'll never get back how it was way back then.
That's interesting. I agree. I don't think that it will be the way that it was in the 50s, or really before that. We're talking 30s up to the 40s, 50s through the 60s. I don't agree that it would be that either, because too much has transpired. We've been bombarded with chemical and biological warfare. Our families' units have been destroyed. So I'm in agreement with you. I do think that the people can come together. I think that the conditions bring people together. I mean, even if you look at something like the case of a Trayvon Martin, and you look at how many young people, let's not even just talk about the old heads, as you call them, but let's just say the young people. Look at how many young people came together just on something as simple as having a bag of Skittles and an iced tea. Just something as simple as wearing a hoodie, having a bag of Skittles and an iced tea polarized the nation and brought them together, brought the youth together under one banner. So that is a sign, brother, that we can come together under causes and common banners. It's just kind of an issue of where the focus will be, what will be the unifying point, and how are we going to do it. And I think these are some of the questions that we're attempting to answer with these men and youth movements and, you know, listening to announcers of yours and others. These are the questions that we have to answer, because ultimately, brother, if we don't answer them, we're going to be annihilated as a people. You know, our youth will be annihilated, and we can't afford that, you know, because the youth, you're our future. And we're the future.
Yeah.
So we can't afford to have you annihilated. And we know that we're losing too many in the streets as it is. And so we have to answer these questions. And so announcers like yours, we appreciate. I don't want you to ever think that your analysis is not important in this revolution, in the movement, because it is the youth who will lead. The young will lead, you know, and the youth inherit the revolution. Go ahead, sir.
The youth nowadays is, I don't think, it's going to take a lot, because in the Trayvon Martin situation, it did bring us together for a short time of period, but right when the case was over with and they see that nothing was going to get done about it, people still went on about their business. You still got people talking about, you know, bringing us together and all that, but they're not really in the communities with us. They're not coming down to the streets trying to help us in the situations that we're in. They're not talking to us about it. They just on TV saying what they got to say, but I don't really see these people in the community. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I have a couple homeboys who wasn't really violent growing up. But I just moved back here like a week ago, and I ran into a couple of them, and they whole mind frame is completely gone. I'm probably one of the only people in my little group that really got my head on straight. And I wouldn't say it's because that's the way they wanted to go, but that's just what society done made them.
That's how they were shaped.
In a short point of time, that's how society done made them. And I'm trying to get them the right way. Like, I got homeboys that really, really don't care if they go out and shoot somebody right now and won't think nothing about it. That's the way society done made it.
Right. And you know what though, brother? And yeah. I don't necessarily say that's a bad thing in a holistic perspective. I think that we have to learn who the hell to shoot and when to shoot. We just shooting for no reason. We just shooting because you know somebody stepped on our shoes, or somebody disrespected our set, or disrespected whatever. But I think that if we would learn,
it's not even no game. I'm black power to the core. Like, I love my black people, and it's
yes,
a few young people that feel like the older people do. because they just out there for. And if some older people, like, I somebody talking about somebody sagging in the street, you don't try to go for that and walk and talk to him, just look at him and down him. You're going to keep doing it. You got to take the approach and go over there and try to teach this and so about being a better parent or a better black person, because these going to people that don't give a fuck about it. Don't show nobody. Some white people
yes,
do, but there's no way that we should cool with these people like that.
No, sir, not at all. I say we should unite amongst ourselves first before worrying about anybody else. But what I would tell you is that the generation that you are, I don't know how old you are, brother, but the youth
of today. I'm 22.
Okay, and so you know your generation and a little older or a little younger is the greatest generation that we've ever had. And I'm gonna tell you why. It is because. Not because we shoot each other, because we kill each other, because we're lost or what have you. It's because we are fearless. The generation that you're in is the most fearless generation that has ever been produced. And if we can just get the movement in us and the objectives in us and the soldier mentality in us, to not kill for no reason, but to kill, you know, in self-defense or to kill to protect, the babies, to kill to protect a proper education, to kill to protect a black woman from being raped and for righteous causes, then we'll turn around what 400 years of white supremacy has done to us. What I would encourage you to do, brother, is to learn more about the new Black Panther Party, learn more about the cause, the movement.
I'm trying to join.
Well, then all you got to do is just take my number, brother. I don't know if you got it, but if you got a pencil and a paper handy, just take and write 502-758-7785. 502-758-7785. What I'll do is I'll take yours, and we'll talk, brother, because all them brothers that we – and sisters we talked about back in the day in the 60s, them were young brothers and sisters. They were about your age. Fred Hampton was about your age. He was organizing the whole city of Chicago, the gangs and everybody. They were young men and women who just understood that they had to, make certain strides to push the people forward. And so the youth are always the ones to do it. And I think that you and others like you will be the ones to do it in this generation and really do it greater because you all have less fear.
Yeah, and I think it's, like, it wasn't a lot of black celebrities back then, so I feel if we got the black celebrities and the kid and the people that kids look up to move forward with this movement, it'll influence a lot of young people because that's what they look up to nowadays. You didn't have a lot of black people in the spotlight like that back then, but nowadays the celebrities that we do have, they're not concerned about the black youth like that. They're concerned about themselves, and they have this to where they end with. But if we got, I'll say probably about 10 popular celebrities, probably not even 10, to just speak with this movement and preach to the youth like that, I bet you they'll follow them. There's no doubt in my mind that they will.
We're going to work to make it happen. If you go to our website, MillionYouthMarch2013.com. I don't know if you heard us from the beginning of the show, but we played a song by Lil Scrappy. I know you know who Lil Scrappy is.
Yeah, I know Lil Scrappy.
Called I'm Trayvon Martin. He put a song together for us called I'm Trayvon Martin. And if you just follow this movement, this Million Youth March movement, you'll see the Nick Cannons, and you'll see Tommy from Martin, and you'll see little Sister Autumn and Shanti.
That's nobody young people look up to. Scrappy.
You'll see Bun B. You'll see Lil Webby. All of them are with us, bro. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Webby's with us. Bun B's with us. Lil Bootsy's with us. Who else you want to name?
Bun B. He's people that my generation look up to. But as far as Bootsy, okay. I don't really listen to his music like that, but I know it's a lot of young people that follow him. I'm talking about people like you gotta have like major time for them. They're not really out there like that. And then if you have young celebrities that do it too,
that'll make a big movement. But as far as and Boosie and all them, I feel like in New Orleans, I know it's a lot of trouble down there. That's what people in New Orleans look up to. So you might get people from New Orleans to follow them. But in different regions, people do different stuff. So we need
Who would you like to see involved in the movement? Maybe we can reach out to them.
That's a good question. I don't even. We're gonna need some great A celebrities like LeBron or somebody.
LeBron James.
I don't know if y'all listen to young rappers or anything like that, but I know out here it's a couple young people that really have a influence on the younger generation.
Well,
and it's a lot of young people
who?
Coming up. You ever heard of Rich Homie Quan? Rich Homie Quan. It's a lot of people and there's a lot of young people that follow him, and I know like he be speaking the stuff in his music that we talk about. Well, a lot of people.
He's in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, he's in Atlanta.
Well,
and because some people
he's
not ignorant, people won't give them a chance because of how country we sound or what we look like. But it's a lot of people out there that can get a lot of people to join the movement.
You ain't got to worry about that. If he's in Atlanta, we can get somebody to contact him. So we'll work on that. But what happened, me and you have to talk more off of air because I don't want to take the rest of the time off from the rest of the callers. But again, I got your number, okay?
Okay.
Like I said, if you wrote down my number, take down my number. And what's your name, brother? I've enjoyed your conversation. What's your name?
Tavares Brown.
All right, brother Chavon. All right, so we're gonna talk more. If not today, we'll talk tomorrow. I know it's getting late, but I got your number and I got you locked in. You'll see my number from a 502 number. We'll talk more, brother, because it's input like yours that will make this Million Youth March special and will make it real. And if there's any way that we can reach out and contact them brothers and sisters that you feel like would influence the young youth more to turn their life around, then by all means and everything necessary, we're going to do it, brother.
Okay, we can do that.
All right, appreciate you. Keep your head up, soldier. You a man of God. Black power to you.
Black power to you.
All right, appreciate it. Brother Trevon signing in from Atlanta, Georgia, giving us the 411 on who we should reach out to and giving it to us from the youth perspective on how we can make this Million Youth March more real and concrete and make it spread. That's what we need to know. See, that's the kind of information that you need to know when you're trying to talk to your audience, trying to target your people, and trying to pick them up out the mud. Who do we talk to? Who's the shot callers? Where do we go? When do we go? That's what we need. Brother Trevon going to be an intel man. Listen to me, Trevon. You're going to be an intel man. You're going to give the on-the-ground report on what to do so we can move the movement forward. It's a beautiful thing. Take another call. Area code 562-607, 562-607. You're on live Black Power Radio. Your host, Sean Saddam Kweli. We're talking about stopping the killing and living that thug life. Talk to us. What's your thoughts, Black Power? Welcome.
Black Power, Black Power, Black Power, Brother Sean. How are you? This is Mahogany.
Black Power, Black Power, Black Power. I'm great. What's going on, Black Rider?
Black Rider, yeah. I'm sorry I won't be able to make it to the Million Youth March this year for September 7th. But on that day, I do plan on, in solidarity, I do plan on doing some things I'm not going to buy. I'm going to not buy in any stores and support any capitalistic stores or businesses around and reaching out. And I'm going to reach out to our youth on that day. I'm going to really pass out some flyers for me and Black Jesus event. It's going to be sponsored. I'm going to do it with the Black Writers name, the Black Writers Black on Black and Black on Brown Unity event. It's going to be October 26th. But on September 7th, I'm going to round up as much as the youth, the Cuban, Puerto Rican, Haitian, Jamaican, Black youth as I can to try to get them to come to this event. Because what I plan on doing is getting pictures of Black and brown youth and people in general who were murdered by the police or murdered by another Black person or another brown person and put it on a big mural, like a big poster, huge poster, and put it up. But I have a lot of ideas. Black Jesus and I are going to be meeting this coming Wednesday in Inshallah on fundraising for the event. We're going to hold it at the African Art Cultural Center. We're going to make it an all-day event if we can. But that's my plan for September 7th, is to not buy out of any stores. And I suggest this for anybody else who's not going to make it, to at least participate in some way by not buying out of stores and just reaching out to your youth. If it's just your niece or your niece's friend who's in trouble or pregnant and don't know where to go, or a lost youth that just thinking about having sex unprotected and, you know, just running out around in gangs, just plan that day just to sit around and talk to you. You just walk up to a young girl or boy, sit down and talk to them, because a lot of our children here in Miami and Liberty City over town, they're looking for attention, and they're looking for attention from the adults. They're looking at us as role models, and that's the day that I would suggest that everybody do. Be role models on that day. Go out and reach to your youth. That's all I have to say.
That's interesting. I do want to say that on 9/7 there is a national blackout. There's a national blackout. We're putting economic sanctions on our enemy, according to attorney Dr. Malik Salouf Shabazz. We're putting an economic sanction on our enemies on 9/7/13. So if you cannot make the Million Youth March meeting, you can't fly to New York City. Number one, what we want you to do is round up some youth and round up some community. Round up some youth, round up some community. Find a place to pull down this link. This Million Youth March will be webcast. Now, for those listening and for you, Sister Mahogany, we're going to webcast it by God's grace via newblackpanther.com, which will forward to millionyouthmarch2013.com. So don't fret. You round up some youth. Go to work right now. You and our brother, and our comrade, Brother Black Jesus, you'll go down there to round them youth together, round the community together, and y'all get y'all a laptop or get y'all a big TV
right,
or something, and y'all see this, okay? So no excuse. We make it happen. But 9/7/13 is a national blackout, and so we want to push that and be able to put economic sanctions on those who put a stranglehold on our community. If they can pay money to put cocaine and drugs in our community, pay money to incarcerate our youth, incarcerate our people, pay money to keep us deaf, dumb, and blind, and miseducated, then we got to withhold our money and invest wisely. So it's a national blackout, 9/7/13. You got to spread the word. And like I say, take those flyers. Many of you are my Facebook friends. Y'all take them flyers on Facebook and put them on your own page. You know, I'm not making them for myself. I'm making them for you all and making them for us so we can spread it. So that'll help. That'll help.
Will do, Brother Sean. Will do.
All right. Thank you so much. Send our love to Brother Black Jesus and tell him I said thanks. Black Jesus got a whole bunch of PDF and e-books for me that I really appreciate. I haven't had a chance to say thank you. A whole bunch of Black history books and things he turns people on to. So tell Black Jesus we say thanks, and keep the proper propaganda going, and appreciate you, Sister Mahogany, for organizing in Miami. And we pray that God blesses you with much more strength to continue in the spirit of a mighty Harriet Tubman to liberate our people.
Oh, thank you, Brother Sean, and may Allah bless you too. Keep the struggle up.
All right, I appreciate that. Black power, power to the people.
Power to the people.
What I'm talking about. Sister Mahogany X checking in. Sister Mahogany X, Miami, Florida, checking in, letting it be known she supports the Million Youth March. And I know that you support the Million Youth March too. And again, if you can't make it to New York for whatever reason, by all means, do your best to make it, number one. I mean, we got enough time to try to scrap and scrounge and do whatever we got to do to try to get there. But if you cannot make it, it's just absolutely impossible that you cannot be there live and in person. You make sure you tune in to MillionYouthMarch2013.com and be a part of the movement while it's going on live. And make sure that you round up some family. Make sure you round up some community. Make sure you round up some groups. Make sure you get some youth together so they can hear the message. Be inspired. Change their life. And we change our life. And we turn this thing around and get our youth about these penitentiaries and get our minds and hearts and souls right so we can stand up and be the people that we're supposed to be. Hell, we were here first. We were here first. All right, let me take another call here. Area code 912-281. 912-281, you're on live. Black Power Radio, your host, Sean Saddam Carly. We're talking about living that thug life. Go ahead with your question, your comment. Welcome.
Black Power, this is Brother Dale X, man. Yo,
Hey, Black Power.
What I believe, what's up, bro? You know what I'm saying? Well, what I believe is wrong with this generation is, I heard a young boy from Atlanta, they're not putting any reality or realism with what's really going on. Trayvon was a young boy. They got murdered. He got murdered. And Zimmerman ain't get off from a standing ground. He basically got off from justifiable homicide or self-defense because his lawyers proved supposedly that Trayvon attacked this man. So that's why he killed him. And I just don't understand why the youngsters don't understand today they are really being hunted like deer. We knew that back in the late 80s and the 90s. We not only knew that, we had movies and we had conscience and we had Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society. And you've seen these movies and the reality of what can happen to you with that life if you want to live that life. And it's like, it's no more seriousness being put to it. You know what I'm saying? Like the young man, he mentioned Rich Homie Quan. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you want to bring somebody to you that, you know what I'm saying, you can relate to on a rap level, but we talking about trying to enlighten you. You know what I'm saying? He's an entertainer. Entertainers now aren't like they were in the 60s, like Ali and in the 40s with Jackie Robinson, where these men were conscious. They were socially conscious. They're just entertainers, and that's all they really want to be, most of them for the most part. They don't want to take a really stand in our issues, black or white, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, we had a few that got a little bit involved with the Trayvon, but they didn't say too much because they're not going to say too much because that can interfere with their livelihood. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That industry will blackball them very quickly if they buck, supposedly, if they become one of us. You know what I'm saying? If they become a runaway slave. So they got to stay on that plantation. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's true.
So,
that's true.
Yes,
what I don't want to do, my brother Bedell, what I don't want to do is separate from them in the sense of like we're not them and they're not us. And I know what you're saying, but the real deal is that those of us who have the light, as you know, it's our responsibility to give to those who don't have the light. And we know that they were put in that condition. Even Rich Homie Quan, if he signed to a label of, you know, put himself in a position where he's, you know, castrated, is most of the time it's economics because he come up out the hood, he's trying to get some money, he's trying to, you know, change the condition. And even our entertainers from the 60s and 70s, many of them were forced into positions where they had to speak out. One of our endorsers of the march, Brother Khaled Al-Mansour, he wrote the song for James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. He wrote that song for James. And the Black Power Movement forced James to put that record out. And so same thing with today. A lot of these entertainers behind the scenes, and I know that, you know, as you know, FOI, what have you, that a lot of these entertainers behind the scenes are very conscious. They may not put out conscious music, but they know what's happening. But as you said, they're just slaves on the plantation. But we have to give them ways to express themselves and give them ways to at least show that they're with us. And so you know, some of the entertainers have come forth to help the movement. Others we're waiting to hear back from, and if they're not entertainers at all, but just have, you know, some type of local influence or what have you. I mean, and that's the way that we got to do it, because again, it's like if me and you reach 200 and we reach 300, and that's fine. We reach 1,000, that's fine. But if they're reaching millions by the day, then we want to be able to put something in their minds, in their hearts, to where they can speak it to the youth who they're influencing every day. So, but I feel you 100%. I feel you 100%.
Hey, I got one more thing.
We're doing it in life. Yes, sir.
There's one more thing I want to say, Brother Sean. And you know what I'm saying? I'm from NYC, born and raised. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? I'm from the Bronx, born and raised. Another thing, we have to stop occupying our communities and basically, you know what I'm saying, terrorizing our own communities. I've seen this myself growing up. I participated in some of it. What I mean by that is, you know, you have good people that basically financially, they don't have anywhere to go. And, you know, it's ones that's there, they basically making these people live in fear in their life, you know, with the gang banging and the drug dealing and all that. We got to stop that. We have to love each other. And I hope that's a big message that spreads at the march. We have to start loving each other, but it also takes tough love. Us older brothers, we got to start coming to them young boys. Like, yo, what you doing is wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got to step to them like men. Like, yo, what you doing is wrong, and not that it needs to stop. It has to stop. Not now, but right now. We shouldn't be scared of our children. You know what I'm saying? That's another thing. We need to stop being so delicate and, we need to stop being so scared of our children. And you know what I'm saying? Those are our communities. 90% of them dudes that live there live with somebody. They don't have no out there. They don't pay no taxes, but they'll say, that's my block. That's my hood. They don't even pay no taxes or nothing. We have to start taking back our communities, and it's going to take some love. You know what I'm saying? But that's it.
Right.
That's all I'm going to add. You know what I'm saying?
I appreciate you. I'm with
you.
Sir. I think that a lot of the young black males, especially, and this is not to exclude the females, but in particular the young black males, many of the young black males have never seen the example of real manhood. Again, as you heard me and Brother Chavon talking about, that the family units are destroyed, you know, and so the father in many of these homes are not in the homes. And so when they see us, you know, come to them, you know, in a staunch manner and say, what you're doing is wrong, they take that offensively because they look at it as they're trying to feed their families, some of them, you know, and some of them it's the only way they know. And so what I encourage us to do is of course be strong and to be righteous, to be forceful in terms of our delivery and what we're standing on, but also to be loving and to be that balance.
No doubt.
Again,
no doubt.
Many of them have never, many black men have never had another black man say, black man, I love you. You know, you're the best. You're strong.
I agree.
Yes, sir. You know what I mean? You God's choice. You know what I'm saying? And so,
yes, sir.
So all they hear their whole life is, you know, you ain't nothing. You a young black male. You the worst of the worst. You know, you're going to end up in
jail.
You're going to end up a criminal. You know, and so, you know, opposites attract and like repels, you know, as the lessons teach, and you know that. And so what we're doing, brother, is encouraging. We're encouraging men to be men. If men are going to step to men, let's step to men like men in a balanced way. And that's what we hope to bring out with the march. With the movement, and we really want, we welcome your support and want you there. You're there in New York, so we need your support more than really anywhere else.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. But thank you so much for your call. I appreciate your comments, brother. Stay tuned with us and keep moving with us, brother.
No doubt, bro. I appreciate the show. Thank you.
Thank you, black man. Okay. Peace and black power.
Yes, sir. Peace, black power.
Brother Dale checking in. Brother Dale checking in from New York. Letting it be known, we do. We gotta be men, and we gotta step like men. But you know, in stepping like men, we also gotta show some love. I mean, I know it's frustrating. It really is frustrating when you're watching, you know, mothers cry, and you're seeing children die, and you're seeing it for senseless reasons. But I keep saying that we have to go to the root. You know, go to the root of the problem, and the root of the problem is not the young black male. Now, we might be the branch of the problem. We are the branch and the circumstance of the problem, but we are not the root of the problem. And until we tackle the root of the problem as a people, we will not stop the flow of criminality. We will not stop the flow of violence. We will not stop the flow of gang disruption. None of that, because the root has not been solved, and the root is white supremacy. The root is institutional racism. The root is economic terrorism, and that's what it is. We've been made poor. We've been placed in ghettos, economically deprived, educationally deprived, deprived of knowledge itself, and so we got to restore that. And we restore our people. We give our people the real reparations, which is all of the above, knowledge itself, land, culture, freedom, all of that. This stuff turns around. And so the only reason why it has not turned around, family, is because there is peoples in the world, there are peoples here, enemies here, devils here, Satan's here, opposers here that have a vested interest in your destruction, in my destruction, in our incarceration. They get paid off it. Study the Rockefellers. Study the ruling families that run the world, run the oil, run the lands. Study all that. They don't want none of this to change. They set the system up for us to be destroyed, for us to fail, and for them to capitalize off the destruction. So when you're talking about a revolution, you must talk about a revolution of the mind, a revolution of the heart, a revolution of the body, a revolution of the soul. the revolution of the spirit. It has to be a holistic revolution, complete constructive change holistically, and that's what we're pushing for. We're pushing up now. We're 10:30 now, so I don't want to hold us too much longer, but I do want to say make sure that you go to MillionYouthMarch2013.com. Go to your web browser. I mean, seriously, literally do this. MillionYouthMarch2013.com. And look at this beautiful, beautiful website that we've put together for you to enjoy and to know what's happening. And again, we got the mission statement on it. We got the history of the Million Youth March on it. We got a way that you can donate. We got a way that you can buy Million Youth March apparel, T-shirts, hats. We're going to tell you where the locations are on there. We got the panels on there. We got contact. We got charter bus information live on the website. So, I mean, the spirit is there and the movement is there. And so now all you got to do is get yourself there and get your family there and help us to counter the conspiracy to destroy black boys and the black family and stop this homosexual attack and gay marriage against the family. And let's work on our black economics and entrepreneurship and the health crisis. And let's work on educational challenges, and let's work on our so-called gangs and the bullying. Let's work on our college students and the black families, like we heard from Brother Batin tonight, who was raised a phenomenal daughter and Sister Autumn Ashanti, and he's working on his nephew's son. We're celebrating black fathers and celebrating black mothers, celebrating black families, and let's do all of that. We also got a fashion show prepared for you. We got criminal justice and police brutality seminar for you, how to deal with that, black family and religion. We got political prisoners for you. We're talking about international paradigms, getting our youth from out of the ghettos, but taking them around the world. We want to take youth, black youth, to Africa next year. We want to take black youth to Africa next year, 2013, by God's grace. We want youth straight up out of the hood, by God's grace, to be able to go back home and black home. We'll talk about that. We want to talk about being able to control media, the power of controlling media and constructing black youth and paradigms. We want to talk about controlling the politics of our community. We're talking about some real movements and real black nationalism. So it's something to get behind, and it's something to most definitely support. And all you got to do is stay tuned, Black Power Radio, stay tuned to the website. And if you got a few extra bucks to donate towards to keep us going, then you do that over at paypal.com, attorney.shabazz@yahoo.com. And you keep the faith, and you keep fighting, and you keep the spirit alive. We will survive. I want to say that in closing. We will survive. It is already written in all of the scriptures, no matter what you believe, if you're a Muslim, if you're a Christian, if you're a Hebrew, if you're a black Jew, whatever you are, we're the real black Jew, we're the real black Hebrew. But if you're a black Buddhist, whatever have you, whatever your spirituality is, if you were a gangster, if you were thug, if you were criminal, if you were loan shark, whatever you are, whatever your station of life is, we will survive as a people, and we will make it past what's going on in our neighborhoods. What we have to do is have the stamina to make it and the intelligence to make it, and we got to move smart. You got to move smart, and you got to move with some strategy, and you got to be a soldier and a warrior in this hour. And so to learn more about the New Black Panther Party, of course, you go to newblackpanther.com, go to nbpphq@yahoo.com, and we'll give you what training that we have, and we'll teach you how to be like the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, like Dr. Malik Shabazz, like Sister Mira Sankofa, like so many others who have worked through the hells and smells of North America and are pushing the revolutionary line to be the vanguard for our people. But most importantly, support your movement and support your people. It's black power for black people. It's all power to the people, my brothers and my sisters. And you have to remember this, as I tell you so many times. Remember, if black people are not free, there's nobody that's free. And so we'll leave you with our brother who came to the Million Youth March in 2003 and now has become an international star around the world, being an independent artist. And we support independent and revolutionary artists. Brother Immortal Technique, talking about civil war. He's a revolutionary. Black power.
Yeah. You know what? Fuck Dirty Hair.
Immortal Technique.
We got guns too, nigga.
Killer Mike.
Fuck Terminator, nigga.
Brother Ali.
Fuck Rambo.
No. Yeah.
The ghetto is like a prison with invisible bars. No matter where you at, it always follows you where you are. And it's hard out there for a pimp to get out of. niggas underground in the Confederate States. Ironically running from slavery that prison creates. So I never hate on the South, I respect their vision. I just hate on niggas that promote Samboism and white execs that love to see us in that position. They reflect the stereotypes of America's vision. They want us dancing, cooning and hollering. Only respect us for playing sports and modeling. More than racism, it's stay in your placism. All people are trapped in practical black racism. So fuck a civil war between the North and the South. It's between field niggas and slaves that are stuck in the house.
Civil war for the soul of a nation. This is a struggle to save civilization. Demonstration overthrowing the occupation. The annihilation of mental colonization. Civil war for the soul of a nation. We fight for the future of our civilization. Destroy the corrupt government organization. Trying to survive cultural assassination.
Rip niggas, blood niggas, essays, Asians. Why the fuck we born with each other's population? The devil wanna dead all our population. People in folk nations. Why the separation? Why we got Jamaicans hating on Haitians? When the British and French rape both nations. Mexicans and blacks kill each other straight hating. While the government profits from prison population. If you on the bottom, be you Anglo or Asian. You gotta recognize the realness in what I'm saying. You gotta recognize another G ain't the enemy. When the police ride and kill us frequently, we gotta make you see where the truth be. If you achieve it, grow and develop GP. 50 years of gains and our people still poor. If we really run the streets, we should really end war.
Civil war for the soul of a nation. This is a struggle to save civilization. Demonstration overthrowing the occupation. The annihilation of mental colonization. Civil war for the soul of a nation. We fight for the future of our civilization. Destroy the corrupt government organization. Trying to survive cultural assassination.
Listen, our hearts were torn apart just like y'all were. Watching towers full of souls brought us order. Every time we called your office, you ignored us. Now you're holding hearings on us all inside of Congress. Microscopes on us, asking which the hardest. My answer was in line with all of the founding fathers. I think Patrick said it best, give me liberty and death. I shall never accept anything less. You claim innocence, you play victimless. But you gave the kiss of death in the name of self-defense. Slavery and theft of other nations to the end. Of pacifying your citizenry with success. We believe in freedom, justice, security. But they're only pure when they're applied universally. So certainly if I rage against the machine, my aim was only to clean the germs out of the circuitry. Urgently putting fear inside your heart. Make you burn Qurans and tell me not to build a mosque. Me, my wife and babies, we ain't never made you hard. We just wanna touch our head to the floor and talk to God. Ask him to remove every blemish from our heart. The greatest threat of harm doesn't come from any bomb. The moment you refuse the human rights for just a few, what happens when that view includes you? Civil war.